Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 8th, 2022 meeting of the Arroyo Grande City Council. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Paulding?
Here.
Councilmember Barnett?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Here.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Here.
Would you please join me for a moment of reflection? Thank you. Tonight we have Mr. Jim Gregory from the IOOF Lodge 258 to lead us in the flag salute. I do not see him, however.
I also don't see him on Zoom.
All right. Would you please rise and join me in the flag salute?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And City Clerk Mattson, should Mr. Gregory come in on the Zoom, we can certainly have him tell us a little bit about what's going on with the IOOF 258 at that time. All right, that takes us to agenda review. For closed session announcements, 5A, we have none tonight. Item 5B is the ordinance is being read in title only. So for brevity, I will move that all ordinances presented at the meeting shall be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second.
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
And that quickly takes us to item 6A. This is our update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts, and I'll turn it over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you very much. I actually do not have very many updates to provide for the council or the public this evening on COVID. Of course, we are here in person, and that's largely or maybe entirely because things are improving and we're able to now meet. It's really great to see everybody and be able to kind of resume some sense of normalcy. We're all also taking advantage of the new mask requirements, which is essentially we don't have any required, although there is still a recommendation for mask wearing. And so we're just happy to have everybody here. I don't have really any updates in terms of new numbers. The county hasn't posted any for this week at this point in time, but we did see a press release from our county public health officer last week that just, you know, confirmed what we've been seeing, which is a decline in our cases and overall quite a bit of improvement in the virus at this point in time. So that's it for me on that item.
All right, let's change the process and see if anyone has any questions regarding. Nice to be able to not have to go one by one through the Zoom. Let's go ahead and open up to the public and see if anyone has questions or comments regarding our countywide update, our COVID-19 efforts.
We do have one hand raised. AGP, if you could administer that.
Okay. Our first commenter is Joan Suttle. If anyone else would like to speak, please raise your hand now.
Joan, you can't hear it.
Joan, go ahead.
I was just calling in to tell you I couldn't hear anything, but now I can. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Then this time I'll go ahead and close public.
Sorry, one moment. We have one more.
Oh, forgive me.
The next commenter is Bulbul Rajagopal.
Hi. I don't have a quick comment, but your room monitor is turned off and none of us can hear the audio on Zoom.
Thank you for that. We will work on it.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thank you all, too, for your patience as we figure out all this new technology and being back in person and doing hybrid meetings. This is one of the blessings of COVID that we'll be able to bring this forward. So again, be patient with us. And at this time, I'll close public comment, and we'll move on to item 6B. This is City Manager Communications.
Thank you. I do have a few items to update everyone. Super, that's great. Just having a little echo occurring. It's bad enough to hear your voice once, but to hear it twice. Thank you. So a few items that I wanted to update everyone on. They're all good news, so of course it's the best opportunity to highlight some good work going on in our community. First wanted to kind of highlight where we're at with Central Coast Blue. Both the cities of Grover Beach and Pismo Beach have approved the cost-sharing agreement, which our council approved at the end of January. The technical advisory committee that was described in that cost-sharing agreement has been convened. We've met once, and we will be continuing to meet monthly. And so we're moving forward on that project at a really good pace and really looking forward to continuing to provide updates as we go along there. Also wanted to provide an update on the basketball court public art project that's occurring at Strother Park. A lot of work has occurred over the last week to prep the area, and so this weekend the actual painting and art installation will occur. Many thanks to provide on that really exciting project. First to Noah and Michael Pick, who have really spearheaded that and brought together Project Backboard to promote the project and bring it to fruition. To Arroyo Grande Public Art for supporting that project and helping to vet it and also bring it to fruition as well. And many thanks to the mayor for being a really integral part of that and for helping on the project itself. So this is really a labor of love for our community. It's just something we like to really highlight as well for our Recreation Services Director Sheridan Bolkin and our Public Works crew for really facilitating it coming together. So we look forward to sharing the ultimate outcome and providing pictures at a future meeting. We also had a really successful Meet the Machines event over the weekend about a week and a half ago. We had over 2,000 attendees come and get to meet all kinds of big machines. Many thanks to our supporters and sponsors to really make that event happen, as well as our Recreation Services Department. I think it was really fun and exciting for the community and all those little ones who just, you know, want to see how things work. So thanks to everyone for helping make that happen for us and for our community. We do have spring break camps that are going to be offered coming up in April, as well as our egg hunt and festival on April 16th at Elm Street Park from 10 to 1. So if anyone's looking for things coming up in April, our Recreation Services Department has a number of fun events and community-wide things that people can participate in. And then finally, a couple items coming forward. We're hoping later in this month, if not this month, then soon. One is a discussion of vacation rentals. So we will be bringing a study session forward to the City Council to talk about our vacation rental ordinance. And then also a study session to discuss an ordinance addressing SB 9. And so SB 9 is the legislation that really enabled by right duplexes. It's kind of what people might have seen relating to single-family residential properties being able to be split and have by right according to the state. And so we're working on an ordinance to address what we can to the extent we can for our local community. And so that's it from me on updates for tonight.
Thank you. And before I go to the council to see if anyone has follow-up questions, I did want to add a little bit about the Strother Park basketball court project. If you would like to help out, you can go to royagrande.org and our recreation services page and sign up to help out on Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. And also, there are a little bit of shortages. We do are looking for some donations, so when you do that, you can make a donation, or if you want to just do the donation, you can do that too. Either way, we could use your help. So if you could go to the Aurora Grande Recreation Services page on our auroragrande.org website, that would be great. So let me check in with the council and see if anyone has questions of the city manager. Okay, then let's open it up to public comment. Does anyone have questions on item 6B or comment on item 6B? And anyone on Zoom?
We're going to have ATP administer this, so we don't have the feedback. I don't have Zoom, so they'll administer this for us.
All right. AGP, anyone on Zoom for item 6B?
If anyone on Zoom would like to comment on this item, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
All right, thank you very much. So I'll close public comment, and this brings us forward to item 6C. This is honorary proclamation recognizing March 2022 as Women's History Month. And if Officer Elia Esparza can meet me at the podium, I'd love to read that to you. Good evening.
Good evening.
This is an honorary proclamation recognizing March 2022 as Women's History Month. Whereas every March, Women's History Month provides an opportunity to honor the generations of trailblazing women and girls who have built our nation, shaped our progress, and strengthened our character as a people. And whereas throughout our history, despite hardship, exclusion, and discrimination, women have strived and sacrificed for equity and equality in communities across the country. And whereas generations of Native American women have been stewards of the land and continue to lead the fight for climate justice, Black women fought to end slavery, advocate for civil rights, and pass the Voting Rights Act, and suffragists helped pass the 19th Amendment to the Constitution so that no American could be denied a vote on the basis of sex. And whereas the 2022 theme established by the National Women's History Alliance is Women Providing Healing, Promoting Hope, which is both a tribute to ceaseless work of caregivers and frontline workers during this ongoing pandemic, and also a recognition of the thousands of ways that women of all cultures have provided both healing and hope throughout history. And whereas the city of Arroyo Grande reflects on the achievements of women and girls across the centuries and pays tribute to the pioneers who paved the way, let us recommit to the fight and help realize the deeply American vision of a more equal society where every person has a chance to pursue the American dream. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, do hereby proclaim March 2022 as Women's History Month and encourage all citizens to celebrate and learn more about the vital contribution of women to our nation's history. And if you would like to speak a little bit, please, we invite you.
I really don't have any words besides just thank you. It's been an honor just working here, and I feel just as equal as everybody else, and I hope that I'm making the young ones, the old ones, everything in between proud. And, you know, I just do my thing every day, and I'm happy to be here. So
thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Let's go ahead and open up public comment on item 6C. Would anyone like to come up? Okay, and I'll go ahead and check in with AGP and see if there's anyone on Zoom who would like to comment on item 6C.
If any member of the public on Zoom would like to comment on this, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you. And just to put a exclamation point on the end of this, I believe this is only the second city council group in history that's had a female majority. And I am only the second elected mayor in over 100 years that is female. So let us continue bringing women into leadership. With that, let's go on to Item 7, this is community comments and suggestions. This is where the community can come to us and talk to items that are not on tonight's agenda. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as one body. Would anyone in the chambers like to come forward for item 7? All right, let's check in with AGP and see if there's anyone on Zoom who'd like to comment on items not on tonight's agenda.
If any member of the public on Zoom would like to comment on this, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
All right, I'll go ahead and close public comment. And this takes us to our consent agenda. We have a kind of lengthy one this evening. This is inclusive of items 8A through 8H. Let's first check in with the council and see if anyone would like to ask questions on any of these or pull anything for separate consideration.
I just have a question on 8E. I don't need to pull it, though.
8E, okay.
Just a comment on 8E.
Okay. All right, and before we go to that, I'm going to go ahead and throw this over to our acting city attorney, Mr. Hirsch, to discuss item 8E quite briefly, and then we'll go to first, since it's Women's History Month, ladies first. Mr. Hirsch?
Thank you, Mayor. And what we're you're considering this evening is the version of the ordinance that was distributed as a supplemental on March 4th. So since this is on consent, we just need to read it by title only. Reading the entire thing has been waived. So this is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Chapter 8.08 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code relating to the discharge of safe and sane fireworks. That's it.
All right. Councilmember Barnage?
Thank you, Mayor. So I think I had emailed and asked about the social media for the fine for the fireworks, since that's new. And thank you for all the information that you guys provided. I just want to make sure going forward when we start to push that out that the $1,000 fine is really what we lead with, because I feel like that's new and that's hopefully a deterrent for people setting off the illegal fireworks. So I'm not sure how that will roll out, but that was more of a comment and not a question, because I think that's important. That's why the council chose to do that, is discourage that. Thank you.
All right. Councilmember Storton.
Thank you. When this originally came before council, I did vote to not support the ordinance, but I realize there are a lot of changes that have been made to it, and I appreciate the changes that was discussed with this council. And although I was not in support of it at the time, I appreciate the changes that were made. I appreciate the majority decision, and I think there's some safety issues that have been addressed. So I will be supporting it tonight during our consent vote.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and open this up to public comments. So, public, this is items 8A through 8H inclusive. So would anyone in the chambers like to speak? All right, seeing no one, I'll ask AGP if there's anyone on Zoom who'd like to speak on the consent agenda this evening.
Any member of the public on Zoom would like to speak on the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
All right, I'll bring this back around to council for comment and possible action. Does anyone have any comments to be made? Okay, I'd entertain a motion.
Mayor, I will move approval of consent agenda items 8A through 8H.
I'll second.
And is the reading that we did earlier sufficient, Mr. Hirsch?
Yes.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Bay Ressam?
Yes. This takes us to item 9A. This is our public hearing to consider adoption of a resolution establishing water and wastewater rates for fiscal year 2021 to 2022 through fiscal year 2025 to 26. And Director Valentine is coming to the dais.
Good evening,
Council and Mayor. We have our consultant. Is he on? Okay.
EGP, can you confirm if our there he is.
Okay. And then Jessica's the PowerPoint on here.
Once we're ready.
Okay. So thank you for hearing us tonight. We're here to conduct the public hearing to consider a resolution establishing water and wastewater rates for fiscal year 21-22 through fiscal year 25-26. We have our consultant, Clayton Tuckfield, via Zoom, here to present our presentation of the results of the rate study. Okay, Clayton, feel free to take it away.
Okay, great. Thank you, Nicole. Good evening, everyone. I'm pleased tonight to make our presentation concerning the results of our water and wastewater rate study for the city of Rio Grande. I've made this presentation a few times. I'm relatively certain the city council has seen it before, but I'm not sure if members of the public have. So tonight is more of an abbreviated presentation that gets down to the final results of the study. And so that's what we're presenting to this evening. Next slide, please. So when we conducted the study, we noted that water revenue increases are needed. This means we need to raise the revenue that's currently being received by the water fund. And that needs to be higher to meet projected costs and the financial planning criteria of the water fund. So for example, the costs we need to cover include the city's operation and maintenance expenses associated with the water system. Our Lopez water supply expenses, they continue to increase. The city has a capital improvement spending program, and so the water fund revenue pays for those spending items. And, of course, the Central Coast Blue operation and maintenance expense, as well as debt service payments associated with that project, will begin in fiscal 23-24. So the revenue needs to be high enough to meet these costs, as well as these costs to increase going forward. Now, also, there are financial planning criteria associated with this, meaning that we have a city policy that requires us to meet a certain cash level in the water fund, as well as a debt service coverage ratio requirement, essentially meaning that we have to have revenue high enough to make sure we cover the debt service payment by 1.25 times. Okay, next slide, please. Now, I put this slide up here to illustrate for the public what has occurred with water sales the last 5 to 10 years here. So as you can see, in the first year, fiscal year 13-14, the city was producing about 3,500 acre-feet of water and consuming a similar amount. That decreased down to just almost 2,000 acre-feet in the fiscal year 16-17 with the governor's mandate to reduce water consumption. So essentially, what we were selling a lot of water, which meant that we were collecting revenue associated with those water sales. Since that has declined a lot, we've also had a decline in revenues into the water fund. So this goes to show that we do need to raise rate revenue into the water fund. Next slide, please. So as a result of conducting the study, we developed the water rates that are presented in this slide. So for example, on the left-hand side, you'll see our fixed charges. And depending on what the meter size is at your service location, you will see various prices associated with that. So just as an example, for the 1-inch meter size, the current charge is $38.12. That will increase to $38.78 for the first year. And then likewise will increase going forward associated with our financial plan. On the right-hand side represents our consumption charges, what we're calling variable charges. Excuse me. So we are making some changes here in the tiered structure for our residential customers. So, for example, I've highlighted that in the orange rectangles here. So what tier one was, with 0 to 1,800 cubic feet, that will change to 0 to 1,000 cubic feet. Tier two will be 11 to 2,200 cubic feet, and then tier three will be over 2,200 cubic feet. But this also follows with the idea that single family residential customers have essentially reduce their water consumption, and so our tier breakpoints change associated with the indoor water use and the outdoor water use because of the changes that occurred in the consumption. For the other customer groups, the commercial irrigation hydrating, nothing changes on that rate structure other than the prices continue to increase going forward. Next slide, please. So just to give you an idea of how that will impact single-family customers, those with a 5-inch meter I've highlighted here the an orange rectangle, the average consumption for that customer group, which is 1,900 cubic feet bi-monthly. So you'll see that the current bill for that consumption is $131.22. That will increase to $139.33. So that's an $8.51 increase bi-monthly, which is $4.25 a month. To give you an idea of what Central Coast Blue might be impacting the single-family customer, I presented the graph at the bottom, table at the bottom, essentially showing that the average customer will pay $1.14 or more a month for the first year for Central Coast Blue than he would without Central Coast Blue. Okay, next slide, please. This slide gives you an indication of where your bi-monthly bill would be compared with other communities. So for the average single-family customer in Arroyo Grande, using 1,900 cubic feet bi-monthly with a 5/8 inch meter, if you were to run that through the other rate schedules of these other communities, you'd be comparing your bill to them at those rates. So what this indicates is that Arroyo Grande is almost the lowest of any community surveyed, and that's essentially because you have not raised rates for quite a while here. So we really need to raise revenue and get the fund back in good shape, and I think this indicates that this is a good indication that it would need to occur. Next slide, please. We also looked at the wastewater system. We also identified that revenue increases need to be increased for that fund as well. Now, wastewater rates have not increased since 2009. And we also had the same similar situation as for the water fund. We have the city's operation maintenance expenses continue to increase. We also have a capital spending program that the revenues need to pay for. We also have a cash maintenance level we're trying to maintain, as well as a debt service coverage ratio. Excuse me. Now, I might point out here also that wastewater treatment is provided by the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and they provide fixed charges to customers, which essentially pass through to your customer bill. So the city has no control over the wastewater treatment charges provided by the county. Next slide, please. These are the proposed wastewater rates going forward. Much smaller rate schedule. So every customer essentially is charged right now a fixed charge per month. Currently, that charge is $2.40. That will increase to $2.62 for the first year. And you can see the single-family, multi-family, non-residential variable rates, they also increase going forward with the financial plan. So I'm just kind of showing you what these rates are, because they will be in the Proposition 218 notice when we, last century that has been sent out. Next slide, please. So if you were to look at what the average consumption is for a single-family home, what the average wastewater bill would be for that consumption, we see that the increase would be 70 cents per month going forward. And like I said, the percentage is low because the sand district charge gets added into this, which really represents the majority of the cost that's being charged to the single-family wastewater bill. So it's 70 cents a month, a little over 2% increase. Next slide, please. So in a similar fashion that we did for water, if we were to take the average bi-monthly bill at 1,900 cubic feet and run those through the rate schedules of these other cities, we find a similar situation is that Arroyo Grande is almost next to the lowest wastewater bill for single-family customer, for the average single-family customer. So also indicating that we probably should be increasing those rates to bring in enough revenue to bring our wastewater fund back whole. Next slide, please. So on January 11th, we made this presentation before the City Council. Then the city mailed out Proposition 218 notices both January 2nd or prior to that. Tonight, we're making this Proposition 218 public hearing, and then rates will become effective this April 19th if their rates pass. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you very much. Do you have anything else to add? All right, let's check in with the council and see if anyone has any questions. Councilmember Paulding, any questions?
No questions, Mayor. I had mine answered at the prior hearings. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton?
None as well.
Councilmember Barnage?
No, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Thank you to our consultant for the presentation, but I have no questions.
And I had only one question that was answered prior to the hearing, but I do have a softball for you. Because when we raise rates, often people say, we give you government too much money. And so can you just briefly speak to how essentially we're not allowed to profit off these rates and what the rules are there?
Yes, so as, sure, I mean, you can take it to Clayton.
essentially, the idea is that wastewater rates is set to cover costs. We're not trying to make money. The city produces a budget, they identify the cost, then we have revenue that comes in to essentially meet those costs. So we're not, there is no overhead that's being added on to this to create a profit. It's strictly cost recovery type of rate.
And further, we're not allowed to do any more than cost recovery, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. With that, I'll go ahead and open it up to public comment. Would anyone like to speak on item 9A? Come on up to the podium.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Molly Johnson. I've lived in Arroyo Grande 3 years here, and I'm a homeowner. I would like to make a couple points that are not included in the previous presentation. My first question I'd like you all to consider is, who's going to suffer the most from these increased rates? The answer is disabled, minorities, seniors on a fixed income. San Luis Obispo has a 15% discount on water and sewer bills. Arroyo Grande does not. Until and unless this city implements a discount for low income, I strongly oppose and urge you to oppose this rate increase. Please keep in mind that water and sewer costs are part of housing costs, which when increased on the low income, fuel homelessness. I strongly urge the council to delay any rate increase until a low income rate discount is in effect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to come? All right, I'll turn it over to AGP to see if there's anybody online.
We have one member of the public so far. If any other member of the public on Zoom would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Our first speaker is Ken Leonard.
Good evening. I live right around the corner from where you're meeting. I've been in Arroyo Grande for 24 years and the South County for 52. I was raised by the executive officer of the Water Quality Control Board, and I've worked for a local water company. So I understand very clearly the need to cover the cost of equipment improvements and that sort of thing. My concern is how this affects me personally. Mr. Tuckfield mentioned a number of times the average single-family customer, and I'm assuming that he's imagining that that's probably a house with two people or just over two people, and in my case, we have eight. So I turned off my irrigation 7 years ago, and we're very careful with how we use water. That's how I was raised, and right now, we run about 20 units per bill. So that would put us mostly in Tier 1 under the current system. In the new scheme, as I understand it, half of our water use is going to be in Tier 2. And we're only doing the absolute minimum that we can do in the house. I mean, full laundry loads, no leaking fixtures anywhere. There's nothing else we can do to cut our water use. And yet we're being penalized as if we're being careless with our water use. In fact, our water use in this house is about 31 gallons per person per day. And my understanding is it's about half of what is typical for household use. It's really hard for me to hear how much my bill is going to go up as I'm watching my neighbors install sod and water their lawns. That's my point. Thanks.
Madam Mayor, that was the only speaker on Zoom.
All right. And any written correspondence received?
Oh, I apologize, Madam Mayor. We do have one more speaker. Dennis N. Kelly. Dennis N. Kelly, please unmute yourself.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, you may make your comments.
Hi, my name is Dennis Kelly. My wife and I have lived in the community for over 30 years. And we definitely support water consumption, especially during time, water conservation, excuse me, especially during times like now when we need to have these emergency mandates in place. What we're concerned about is the process of how this is taking place with the rate increase as well as the mandate itself. And I realize we were talking about the rate increase, so I'll keep it to that. The notice that we got in the mail, we just received ours about 3 weeks ago, okay? The voting process to either oppose, it just seemed like it's not the best way that the city could have done it. I think that there's a lot of people who don't really pay attention to those readings or those mailings. I think that for future consideration, the city should consider putting something in the bill that comes in the mail so that when people open up their bill, they can have a choice right in front of them to say yes or no, I oppose or don't oppose, and they can refer back to the mailing if they have any questions, so they can contact City Hall or whatever for further discussion. But
and we could see
there's a lot of people that probably are not going to vote one way or the other just because the process itself is not optimal. The other concern I have is the quality of the water. I know we're talking about supporting various projects that are going to improve our services, but my wife and I were just on the phone today with a soft water company that supplies a tank to our house once a month. We're going to have to double that service because we're noticing that our water is harder than it typically is. And I don't know if someone can answer the question or address it, but how is the quality of the water going to improve, especially in light of the fact that we're going to be, you know, rates are very likely to increase. That's all I have. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to add, this is Kelly, that, again, the process by which opposition or support for this rate increase and input was solicited from the public doesn't feel fair. The timing of such, I wish we would have had more time to review and a presentation from the Water Blue people that are there this evening to become educated and informed about the issues at hand and a more detailed explanation of where the money is going, where it's drilled down to. And as Dennis suggested, probably the most democratic way of soliciting true input from the community is not this letter of opposition that requires all this testamentary statement that you live there, but rather put it in the bill with people. That's what we look at. That's what we see, and solicit our yes or our no at that time. And we don't even know, you say you need a quorum of 51% to overturn this effort to increase our rates. But as a resident, we'll never know how many people actually submitted letters opposing this rate increase. We'll have no way of knowing that. So it doesn't feel very fair. The process is not fair. Secondly, this comes at a time where we, as Dennis said, are all trying to conserve. And the city has legislated some very stiff penalties for going over what our cons are. We've readjusted how we're living. I think Mr. Leonard spoke to that. And we're all trying to do our very best to conserve water at a time where we all need to do that. And this, on top of that, feels very, very uncomfortable. So your timing of this is not good. And so for that reason, Dennis and I, as well as other community members, have submitted letters of opposition to a rate increase at this time, and consideration be given that this is reviewed maybe another year from now. We look at this again. Thank you for your time.
Madam Mayor, that was the last speaker on Zoom.
All right. And before we go to a total or a tally, is there any written correspondence received after 4 o'clock, City Clerk Mattson?
Yes, we do have 4. And just timed out. 1 second. All right, the first one is from Bonnie Davis. It says, to whom it may concern, Brian and Bonnie Davis, longtime residents of Arroyo Grande, strongly oppose the proposed increase in water rates. Inflation, among other things, has already placed a burden on us. If we reduce our water consumption and do not agree with this rate increase. Sorry, it's handwritten, so I was doing my best there. Sincerely, Bonnie Davis. The second one is from Dennis and Kelly Royer, who we just heard from. We are the residents and owners of the property at 441 Stagecoach Road in Rio Grande. We are writing as evidence of our opposition to the city of Rio Grande raising our water and wastewater rates at this time, and note the timing of our last rate increase in 2019. There's not enough data available to us explaining why the rate increase and how this money will be spent to justify this rate increase at this time. Thank you, Dennis and Kelly Royer. And the next one is from Gail Lightfoot. Says, it might be a good idea to discuss adding a fund for a desalination plant to serve the 5 cities and beyond sometime in the future. Ratepayers just might agree to long-term plans, ensuring their community does not collapse for lack of water for the farmers, our businesses, and our homes. And the last one was also from Kelly Royer. And it says, the process in which you decided to solicit input from residents of the city of Rio Grande and the stipulations that you put on that process is not fair and serves only the agenda of the city of Rio Grande in successfully raising our water rates. If it were to be a truly fair and timely process to receive input from concerned citizens, then you should have included a voting opportunity included in each resident and property owner's last or most recent billing statement. Furthermore, how will we as residents ever feel trust in our elected city officials and legitimize the outcome of the protest process without knowing who and how many residents oppose this rate increase? As a longtime resident of the city of Arroyo Grande, I'm disappointed in how this is being handled and the timing of such issue. Our water quality has only been worse. We face heavy penalties for water use over baseline in an already challenging economy. Please reconsider your process. And that's the last.
And with that, now we do have all public comment received, so I'll close public comment at this time and turn it over to the city clerk to do a tabulation of protest votes.
Okay. So in total, so we needed to receive 4,404 written protests for it to be successful, and we have received 15 written protests as of the close of the hearing.
All right. Thank you very much. And there were several questions that came up of the public, so I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and ask them. I don't know who wants to field them. Maybe Director Valentine, we'll start with you. So the first question was, I think it was somewhat rhetorical, but it was who will suffer most and whether or not we could delay this in order to put in a possible or consider a possible low-income program.
Thank you. So we did talk about this when we were working with Clayton to formulate the rates, and he informed us that California was getting ready to provide a program on their own through the state. And so we've just, on February 16th, they released the draft program guidelines for a low-income household water assistance program. So we will be applying for that within the coming weeks and provide information to our customers about how to apply if they are eligible.
Excellent. Thank you. And then one of our callers brought up the really concerning problem of when you have a large household, how this might affect them in a unique way. Can you speak to that?
So they did use the 0 to 10 units. Shane might be able to answer this better, but 0 to 10 units is the minimum usage. Is that correct? The 55 units per household? So it's what the state has mandated for the in-household usage for the average customer. So as it's Ken stated, if his household is that large, it is going to be hard for him to meet within that minimum
number, but that is why the 0 to 10 units was selected for the tier one unit.
Because it matches state?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Then there were several questions from Dennis and Kelly regarding process and the 218 process and whether it's the best way, whether it's fair, and the timing of that. So I don't know which. I see City Manager McDonald leaning forward. Maybe someone would like to discuss the 218 process and the fairness therein.
Sure, I can. I'm happy to talk about kind of the overall, and then we did have one of the slides describe the timing of the notices that were sent out. So we've mentioned Proposition 218, and that's the main legal requirement that we have to meet when we look at water and wastewater rates. And so that's what tells us we can only charge for the costs of service. We can't seek any kind of profit or put the money into our general fund. So we're required to segregate all that income into a separate fund. We call them enterprise funds because they are really just self-sustaining. And so the process we have to go through requires us to, make sure that we give all the information to support the rates that we are considering, to explain what the costs of services are, and then how it is that we're making the rates that we're proposing to charge roughly proportional to the cost of providing that service to those customers. So that's the kind of umbrella that we work within when we look at our rates in general. Our staff reports, our rate study has been before the council. This is the third time. So we started the process back in December, brought a draft study to the council to look at, get some initial feedback on that, and then brought it back to the council again after getting some initial feedback in terms of which kind of options we wanted to look at bringing forward to the customers, because we looked at rates with Central Coast Blue and then also a drought rate. So in California, the way our rate structures work and just the reality of Prop 218 and the way our water systems work, we're stuck in this cycle of the less water you use, the more your rates need to go up to account for the less usage. So Clayton spoke to that a bit. As people conserve more, it doesn't cost us less to run our systems. And as a general rule, the only additional cost then is the actual water itself. So I understand it can be hard because we're asking people to cut back and they have to pay more for the less water that they're using. We're all in that together. We're trying to make sure that we're able to continue providing service. So that's what our goal is here. That's what the rate study goes into. Our staff reports try to describe the thinking behind the rates as well, and certainly there are a lot of appendices to the rate study that go into the costs that we're seeking to recover in some detail in terms of line items. What does it cost for us to participate in the Lopez Reservoir project? What do our Central Coast Blue participation costs look like as well? So that's just giving a little bigger picture in terms of, where is all of this information and how do people access it and know why we're doing what we're doing. And then the protest process, again, that is spelled out under Prop 218 and some statutes that the legislature passed to kind of help local agencies implement Prop 218. We follow a process that is required to give notice 45 days ahead of the hearing and mail that out to all of our customers. And it is set up so that it's not a vote per se, it's a protest process. So it enables the council to adopt the rates if there is not a majority protest, which is different from a yes or no vote by the people, which is something you would see if we were looking at doing an assessment as an example or something that goes on the property tax roll. So hopefully that answer, that may be too much, but it hopefully answers all the questions. And I don't know if Nicole had anything to fill in.
Okay. No, that was great. You got almost everything there. The next question is, there was a comment / question about the timing being too short or the timing being wrong. Can you speak to, it is my memory that we had this and delayed it already once before. I can't recall how long ago that was when we last heard it and decided to not go forward at that time.
That's right. So typically, we, like most cities and agencies, it tends to be a five-year cycle. So the law allows us to adopt rates over a five-year period that can increase during that time or whatever the schedule we adopt. I know our rate consultant would suggest three. And so as we get up to that three-year mark, we'll look at this again. So our last rates were adopted in 2014. And so it set in place a five-year schedule. And the last increase covered by that prior rate study went into effect in 2019. So ordinarily, we should have been before you with a new rate study by the end of that year, so we had new rates to go into effect. There were a few different things that went on. One was we were looking to include a stormwater fee in that rate process, but received essentially a challenge from the Howard Jarvis Association pointing out that that wasn't appropriate, and so we had to take a step back. As we took that step back, COVID started. And there were a lot of reasons why we didn't feel comfortable moving forward with a rate study and increase during, you know, the height of COVID. So we're now trying to catch up. And as part of that vicious cycle, in addition to you use less water, you may have to pay more for the units you use. The longer we wait, the higher the increase will usually need to be in order to account for what we've had to do, which is essentially spending reserves. So we're drawing our bank account down in the meantime, and we're looking to build it back up to make sure we can keep moving forward.
All right. I think that's all the questions that I had written down. Thank you very much to staff for fielding those. So let's bring this back around to the council and see if there is comments or possible motion. Councilmember Barnes, would you like to go first?
Thank you, Mayor. I just have one question that came up from a member of the public that maybe Shane can answer about the hard water.
Oh, sure.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
That's okay. So, Shane, it's interesting because they brought it up and my parents asked me the same question and they felt like it was maybe different. And I know our water fluctuates as far as the soft and the hardness of our water. So maybe if you can just elaborate for the callers that called in as well.
Yes. Is this on?
Yeah.
The water from Lopez Lake is hard. It's always been hard. It always will be hard. It's the nature of the watershed. Our water actually, currently at this time, is actually softer. Mm. But it's still hard because there's a higher percentage of state water coming down the pipeline. For everyone to know, City of Pismo Beach and Oceana Community Service District is taking 100% state water. They're not using any Lopez water. And state water is much softer because it comes from Northern California and it has less hardness. So as far as being more hard, I'd be hard-pressed to believe that, but doesn't mean it can happen. We do pump. We've been pumping a little more well water recently, and our well water is also hard. It's the nature of water in California, at least Southern California, to be hard. But just as an example, the city of Santa Maria, when they started taking state water, they actually banned water softeners because they didn't need them anymore because the state water is softer. Mm. And they didn't want to impart all that salt water into the watershed through the sewer treatment plant. So as the lake lowers, however, there could be some water quality degradation. We'll be drawing from areas of the lake that normally wouldn't be drawn from. Mm-hmm. There's a number of intakes at the lake, seven different levels, and the water treatment operators pick the best quality where to draw from. But as the lake lowers and lowers, those choices become less and less, and we're drawing basically where we have to draw from. Mm-hmm. But the water has always been hard, and we run about 17, 18 grains per gallon. Soft water is about between 2 and 5 grains per gallon. So, yes, the water is hard. That's unfortunate, but it's the best we have.
Okay, thank you. And then just one quick question about the gentleman that called in, Mr. Leonard. He has 8 in his family, and I don't know if that's a new situation or an old situation, but just briefly, could you just elaborate to him and to anyone else about the baseline adjustment that's available if there's extenuating circumstances for people that have moved in or if there's something else going on in the home?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I would suggest that family contact or go to our website. We have a baseline amendment request form. It's pretty easy to fill out. It gives the reasoning, and you email it directly to me. I'll look at it, and I have a set formula based on 2020 usage is what we're using. The average person in Royal Grande in 2020 uses 117 gallons a day per person, and that's what we give. So, for example, be 8 people. I have a number of units for 8 people. And then the reduction, 14% reduction, would be put on that new baseline. But it's pretty painless. And we've done, how many, Nicole?
I know over 150. Yeah, I'd say closer to 200.
I'm feeling about 200. But we've refined the process since the last drought. And I think it works very well. It's fair for everyone. I apply the same numbers to everybody. And that's the process.
Okay. Thank you, Shane. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Comment? Okay. So thank you. Thank you to our consultant. As we've stated, this has been before us 3 times before and a quite extensive study. And we haven't raised the wastewater rates since 2009. And I believe the water rates, was that 2014? Did we? It was when we raised them last, the water?
That was when we last adopted a schedule. Okay. And then under that schedule, they were last increased in 2019.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I also wanted to just quickly read, we did get another public comment that was earlier, about maybe 5 or 6 days ago, and just because it's an opposing opinion, I wanted to read that, and it wasn't, some people might not have seen that, but it's from Mr. McCarthy, and he says, "Dear City Council members, I am writing to simply state that I am in favor of the water and wastewater rate increases as outlined in the newsletter that I received last month. My personal opinion is that this is a needed and overdue increase from what we get in return. I wanted to state my opinion so that if you get cries from opponents, you have at least one person in favor of raising rates. To me, this pales in comparison to the rate increases for phone and internet use, as well as essentials as gasoline. Thank you for your work and dedication." So I appreciate all different views, of course. But as I've stated at the last meetings we've had, the public hearings on this, we have to be able to pay our bills and pay for our infrastructure and maintain our aging infrastructure. And so I am in favor of this going forward. I feel like there's been lots of public outreach and public hearings, and that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Stortner?
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the report and certainly the comments from the public. I really do believe that this has been an open and transparent process. We did start this in December, and we actually delayed it when I was first elected. We did review this in 2019, and we did stall for some time to increase our rates. This is another opportunity where we have to care for what we own, and we own the processes that deliver water and treat our sewage. And it's important that we take care of these things and not fall behind. So I am in agreement with the rate increases. I would really encourage the public. I know some people say this just comes up to them and they don't realize that things like this are happening, but our city has a very interactive communication system where you can get agendas from all of our meetings sent to you, a notification on your phone, just so you can review really quickly what we're talking about on any given time. We're here every 2 weeks. And you're welcome to look at that information to find out what's going on. So I think it's important to at least check that out, so at least you can respond to your government. One other important process of this is our Central Coast Blue, and that is a very important water sustainability project for our community. As that comes forward, we will have another resource of water that's available to us, and we even are in a great position where we might be eligible for some grants which can help reduce our costs in the long run, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity. So I will be in favor of our increase today. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor, and I agree with my colleagues. First, I want to extend my thanks to staff for all the hard work, attention to detail, and Mr. Tuckfield as well for the quality work, and for the public for the important comments today. I would also like to commend our residents for conserving water. We've been doing a really good job cutting back and utilizing the Cash for Grass program and the retrofit program, and we're doing a good job. So why are we here tonight? We're here to proactively develop and pay for our new reliable supply of safe, clean drinking water for our community, and that's through the Central Coast Blue Recycled Water Project, and obviously to pay for the increasing cost of maintaining our water and sewer infrastructure. And to me, really, this is the definition of leadership, and our county region would be wise to follow suit, follow that leadership. As you heard tonight, AG has some of the lowest rates in the area. And regarding new water supplies like the Central Coast Blue Recycled Water Project, one cannot look at the drought situation and assume it will get better. It is going to get worse, and we have to plan for our future and ensure that we don't leave our families, our farmers, and our businesses without water. Another thing I wanted to note is that when our council reviewed how to use our American Rescue Plan Act funds, our federal relief funds, we allocated almost $2 million of that money directly toward our water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure. The intent there was to actually offset the amount that we would have to increase rates. And that was really to help folks on, you know, seniors on fixed incomes and low-income residents who are struggling financially in our city. For these reasons, and in light of the protest threshold not being met, I support staff's recommendation to move forward with these new rates. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem George?
Thank you. Thank you to staff. Thank you to our consultant. We've heard this hearing now three times, and my mind hasn't changed. Unfortunately, as difficult as this is, we live in an area that is affected by drought, and we all hopefully are choosing to live here, and one of the prices to live here is to have to pay for our water. Ms. Lightfoot had mentioned desal, and while we're not doing desal, we do have Central Coast Blue, and that is water sustainability. That is planning for the future, and that comes at a cost of $1.14 for a month for an average family. So for $1.14, we have water sustainability, and that's something that we can't take lightly. Like my fellow council members mentioned, this is a small increase. I don't take it lightly, but it's what we have to pay in order to keep our operations going. And for that, I will be supporting the item tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. And I am in agreement with all of my colleagues, but I did want to add just sort of a different way to look at this. It's our responsibility to make sure that the city stays solvent. And that's what this is about. This is about making sure that we can continue to deliver to you what you expect us to deliver. And we have to be able to pay for what we deliver to you. So that's what this is about. It's about fiscal responsibility. And Councilmember Paulding brought up that we were able to not raise these quite so much because of the significant expenditures that we allocated from our ARPA funds. And further, that if we do get more grant funding for Central Coast Blue, we will not necessarily have to be able to raise the rates to the maximum that are being allowed today. In other words, we are going to start at the 6%, 6+% in April, but we have those annual increases that we may not need to do if we are able to get up to a higher level of grant funding for Central Coast Blue. So this is the maximum that you'll see, and hopefully we'll be able to not have to go to that maximum in the coming years. So with that, would anyone like to make a motion?
I will move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Aurora Grandy establishing water and wastewater rates.
I'll second.
Do we have any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Councilmember Varnish?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. And next we have item 9B. This is public hearing on the creation of a district-based election system and consideration of final district maps. And I believe this is City Clerk Mattson.
All right, good evening. Tonight is the fourth public hearing regarding the establishment of a district-based election system. At the first hearing on July 27th, your council received a presentation from the city's demographer
with a general overview of the districting process and received initial public input on district boundaries. At the second public hearing on August 10th, your council received further public input on local factors to consider in the district map drawing process, received an update, and provided direction to staff on a districting outreach plan. At the third public hearing on February 22nd, your council reviewed draft maps submitted by the public and the city's demographer, NDC. At this hearing, your council selected four maps with modifications requested for three of them. The purpose of tonight's hearing is to discuss the four maps council selected for further consideration, including the modifications requested on those three maps. Staff is requesting council direction on a final map and desired election sequence to enable staff to prepare a proposed ordinance that will set forth the new districts. Following this hearing, staff will bring the proposed ordinance to the City Council for introduction at the next meeting on March 22nd. With adoption of the final map scheduled for April 12th. All draft maps were published on the city's website for public review ahead of tonight's meeting. So with that, I'd like to introduce, we have Daniel Phillips here in person, our demographer, and we'll make sure his presentation's going.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council members. I'm glad to be with you in person and guide you through the final stages of this process. So tonight we're going to discuss the focus maps that have been identified by you, the Council, and compare and contrast those four. But to take a step back and review the process that has taken us to this point. State law requires that there be four total public hearings whenever a jurisdiction transitions from at-large elections to by-district elections. And two of those had to take place before any draft plans are presented. So we had those back in the summer, and those were just to solicit input from the public and talk about what neighborhoods and communities of interest are worthy of respect in the district drawing process. There were further a couple of public workshops which provided training on the public mapping tools, and those were very successful because we got a lot of public submissions in this process. So the deadline for submitting those maps was February 8th, and then they were released on the city's districting website on the 15th. So after those plans are posted, then we were able to have the post-draft hearings, which are meant to discuss and, if necessary, make revisions to the draft plans, as well as to discuss the election sequence. And so we had the first of those on February 22nd, and that resulted in several revisions to a number of the maps, which led us to tonight, which is when we're going to present the focus plans, including three of which are revisions to plans that were presented a couple weeks back. So there will be one final public hearing on March 22nd. So you don't necessarily have to narrow it down to just one plan tonight because we do have that final public hearing. But if you do end up narrowing it down, perhaps you can save that public hearing for a discussion on the election sequence. But it's up to you, of course, how do you want to proceed. But the idea there is to have a first reading of an ordinance on March 22nd, which will allow for the second reading and final adoption to take place on April 12th, which will be before the deadline of April 17th. So I've been through this pretty in depth, the federal and state criteria that govern this process. So I'll be a little briefer tonight. The general principles are to have districts that are equal in population, that respect the Federal Voting Rights Act, but do not engage in what is called racial gerrymandering. And so those are the federal requirements. Under state law, you actually have a rank order of criteria. So you'll see that it's numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. And that's because it may not be possible to adhere to all of those. So in that case, you would prioritize those that are higher up in the list. And so geographically contiguous districts are the very highest priority as the state defines it. So just having districts that are one piece each. Second is to avoid dividing neighborhoods and communities of interest, which are socioeconomic geographic areas that should be kept together. A third is to have districts that have easily identifiable boundaries that people recognize and understand readily. And fourth is to have compact districts that do not bypass one group of people to get to a more distant group of people. And at the very bottom there, you'll see there's a prohibition against favoring or discriminating against a political party. So the idea is to have this be a totally nonpartisan process. And there are other traditional principles you may consider, such as respecting voters' choices. Another way of saying that is to respect continuity in office for any council members who may wish to run for re-election, and accounting for any future population growth. But those are optional considerations that you may or may not want to consider. But if you do wish to consider them, it must not be at the expense of the federal and state criteria. So that leads us to the focus plans. And the first of those is called Focus Plan 902. And this is an unaltered, unrevised, it's the original Plan 902 that was presented to you a couple weeks back. And what this plan does is have a district one. And I will say the district numbering that you see here is just a proposal. So just like with the election sequencing, it's ultimately up to you. Maybe you want district one to be the village district or what have you. But the way it is now is that the Northwest Hilly district is district one. And under this plan, it does cross Highway 101 and takes in a lot of the area between Grand Avenue and the highway. And so that makes the boundary between districts 1 and 2 along Tally Ho Road. But it does keep the whole village together in District 2. And that would leave Districts 3 and 4 to be in the southwestern portion of the city. So under this plan and all of the plans before you tonight, we propose the election sequence of 1 and 3 in 2022 and 2 and 4 in 2024. But again, it's ultimately up to you. It's just a proposal. But this is a change from the original proposal that I brought to you a couple weeks back because of feedback from you about how you'd like to see changes to that. So with this Focus Plan 902, it's quite a low population deviation of 2%. Anything under 10% is considered presumptively constitutional. But all other things being equal, you'd probably want to have a lower deviation if that's possible. So under this plan, you don't really have a district that's very much underpopulated or overpopulated than any other. And under all of the plans, District 3 would be the most Latino district. And the reason we bring that up is just to be mindful of the Federal Voting Rights Act. But under all the plans, they are all in the high teens. So there's not much difference between the plans as far as the percentage of the citizen voting age population that is Latino. So in this case, it's 18%. So this is what Plan 902 looks like. Focus Plan 902 mod meaning modified, takes the original Plan 902 and alters it by having less of District 1 on the other side of the freeway. There is still a portion of District 1 that goes to, is it Montego or Montego? And you, but this area here goes into District 3. And actually something I noticed about all these focus plans is that this triangular area in the very center of the city, I don't know if you have a name for it, this neighborhood, it actually ends up in a different district under each plan. So kind of interesting. That's kind of the middle child here. But you'll see that it's under Focus Plan 902, because District 1 lost a lot of that area that was on the other side of the freeway, it expands to the east so that its boundary is now Stagecoach Road. But the village does remain completely intact in District 2, and we were able to accomplish that by splitting another census block so that we can make sure that the, is it the Crown Hill neighborhood or Crown Heights? Crown, yeah, is preserved with the rest of the village. So in order to do that, then District 2 has to shift further west so that its boundary is along Halcyon. And then District 4 shifts a little further north. This plan has a total deviation just under 6. And its most underpopulated district is 3. And the reason I bring up the most underpopulated district is you might, if you want to make future growth a consideration, you might want to make sure that that growth is taking place in the most underpopulated district so that there's an opportunity for that population to catch up over the course of the decade. So Focus Plan 903 modifies the original Plan 903. And the way it modifies the original Plan 903 is originally that that Crown Hill neighborhood was in District 1, but now it's placed in District 2. And then there is a portion off of Stagecoach that was in District 2 that's now in District 1. So it's a pretty clean swap between those two areas. The rest of the plan is unchanged. The main downside with this plan is it's got a total population deviation that is on the higher end. It's still under 10%, but it's getting pretty close to that limit, maybe a little uncomfortably close. But the most underpopulated district is 3 at minus 4.5%. And so with this plan, you have kind of a more vertical structure to the southwest, where you have a District 3 that goes from the 101 all the way down, and the same with District 4, with the boundary between them being Briscoe and Elm. So Focus Plan 202 mod is very similar to Focus Plan 903 mod. District 1 is actually unchanged between these two plans. So what does change is that with 202 mod, that triangular area that I mentioned before is included with the village district, District 2, so that the boundary is Halcyon Road. Not all the way down, but it goes east at Fair Oaks and then follows the creek down to the city limit. So with this plan, you would have a District 3 that is predominant, almost exclusively north of District 4. So you have a boundary along Ash Street in this case. So the total population deviation is about 5.5%. The most underpopulated district is 1 under this plan. Just about 3%. And again, District 3 is the most Latino district, but at 17%. So that leads me to this final slide, where I ask if you might have any questions about these focus plans, and maybe if you are leaning toward a particular one. And we also have the interactive review map that I can pull up, and I can go into the finer details of some of the focus plans and where the boundaries are precisely drawn. So thank you for your attention, and happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Let's start with the council and see what questions we might have. Councilmember Storton, do you want to kick us off?
Thank you, Mayor. Daniel, thank you very much again. Good to see you in person. I only have one question. I don't want to give you my preference. I'd like to hear from the public first. But my one question was, in regards to 903 Mod, you said uncomfortably close. What does that mean? And is there a problem with it being that close? And what could happen if it's that uncomfortable?
Yeah, so good question. So, yeah, if we're under 10%, we're technically good. It's just there's a little more risk involved when you get closer to that 10% level, especially considering we had to split a couple of census blocks in order to keep the village intact. And so when you split census blocks, you kind of have to estimate how many people live and which side of the split. So in that sense, we can't be 100% sure that our numbers are indeed completely accurate. So having a total population deviation that is closer to 5%, say, is safer, so that if our estimates are somehow shown to be incorrect, then they won't be it won't affect the plan's legality as having equal population districts.
Would there be a fear that it could be legally challenged or some other potential like that?
I would say it's unlikely. What could happen is there's been a challenge to the census data. The Census Bureau, they employed a technique called differential privacy in the last census, which it kind of intentionally muddies up the data for to protect people's privacy. And some people have challenged that as being unconstitutional or such. So there was a court case in Alabama that was ruled in the census's favor, but there could be a possible further challenges in the future that worst case scenario would cause the census to kind of have to go back and reconfigure the data, which may cause a plan that is found to be initially balanced to no longer be balanced with the data update. Again, that's worst case scenario. I don't think it's particularly likely, but it's a possibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor. Thinking about the planning that the council is doing and will do when we go through our general plan update process, and the fact that we've identified the East Grand Avenue corridor as a potential opportunity for revitalization and could increase the population with more mixed use, you know, housing development there. I'm trying to just ascertain that population deviation number and which map reflects that kind of planning approach. Like if there was consensus on the council that we wanted the portion of, I guess in four on Grand Avenue between Halcyon and Elm, for example, let me ask the question another way. Is there a scenario out of these selected maps that shows four with a population deviation with the primary percentage of population deviation? I'm only seeing that in three, in other words.
So your question is there any plan which has District 4 as the most underpopulated district?
Yes.
To allow for that growth?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is not, it is the case in Plan 902, but it's very, very slight.
Very slight.
Just about a percent.
Okay.
thanks for restating my question in a much more self-explanatory way. My next question is just if there was a desire on behalf of the council to prioritize in terms of sequencing the most highly populated Latino area. I'm looking at, in each of these maps, that District 3 has the highest percentage of Latinos. Is that correct? Which district has the second highest amount of Latinos?
Yeah, good question. So I can pull that up. And so when you go to the district elections website and click on draft maps, you'll be taken to a place where the focus maps are featured. And so with you can click on each of these links, and it will take you to a PDF with the map itself, but also the demographics. So if you look here, you'll see that it's usually District 4 that would be the second highest Latino percentage. I'm just going to go and check really quick to make sure that's the case for all the plans, but I'm pretty sure that is the case.
Thank you, and you're really quick on it. I appreciate that. I should ask the question in advance of the meeting, but it just occurred to me during the meeting. Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, you're welcome. So far, yes, it's District 4 and that one, and then District 4 and that one, and finally, it's tied in 202 mod between 2 and 4.
And the range is pretty close in each one of those.
Yeah. We're so I'm looking at citizen voting age population, and that's because that's the courts have interpreted the Federal Voting Rights Act to say that's the key data point when it comes to satisfying that legislation. But we're still talking about pretty small percentages, no matter which plan, and the highest number would be 17%. When you look at the total population, it's a little higher, though. It's about a quarter.
Okay. So if we wanted to prioritize the sequencing to make sure, say, for example, that District 3 or 4 was up for election here in later this year in 2022 in November. Would that run afoul of the requirement that we can't take race into account? Because I know that that's one of the prongs.
So when I refer here to no racial gerrymandering, that means making race or ethnicity the only or main factor when drawing district boundaries. So when it comes to a sequencing, one thing the California Voting Rights Act actually says, the Election Code 110, in reference to the California Voting Rights Act, it says that the sequencing should be done in a manner that respects the intent of that legislation. And so that could be interpreted to make the higher Latino district come up for election first to give them an earlier opportunity to elect a district representative, especially if they have been unrepresented in recent years. That also could be interpreted as, say, you should have that district in a higher turnout election, a presidential election. So really, you could argue either way, because the sooner election is 2022, but the higher turnout election is 2024. So it's ultimately up to you as far as what you think would be best for your community.
And three and four are pretty close, generally speaking, in terms of the percentage of Latinos.
Yes, so it's close, but it's probably about an average of a 4% difference between 3 and 4.
And it depends on which map we're looking at, too.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, that answers all my questions. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnage?
Thank you. Thank you, Daniel. Nice to see you in person. Just a couple questions. So when you're talking about that, one of the state requirements that we look at is the, let me just read that again. Okay, so I just want to ask some questions regarding the socioeconomic areas that should be kept together. So I think I'm understanding this correctly, but I want to make sure. So when you're looking at the different maps, and then you're looking at the different districts, for instance, like if we look at the 202 mod, the multifamily is more intense in that district versus 903, where the multifamily in District 3 is more balanced. So what I think, although maybe you'll tell me no, that doesn't make sense, I would think that if we're trying to balance the district, I'm sorry, not if we're trying to balance the districts, an unbalanced multifamily is not as good, I'm sorry, is better than a balanced. Does that make sense? Am I making sense? Okay, wait, let me ask it another way. So there's more, we're trying to keep different socioeconomic groups together. So the multifamily is more intense in one district versus balanced in the other map, I mean. So would you say that makes it a better map because it's not balanced? Does that make sense?
Yes, I think I get what you're saying. So you're particularly talking about a 202 mod.
Right.
In comparison to 903 mod?
Right. So okay. I think Daniel, the numbers that I have is let's see, multifamily.
If it would be helpful, I have the numbers in front of me.
Yes, that's good. I have it written down here, but the percentages.
Yeah, so it's a small difference, but it is a difference. So with the 202 mod in District 3, it's 32% multifamily.
Okay.
And with the 903 mod, it's 29%. So the idea there is it's multifamily residents are multifamily housing is slightly more concentrated in District 3 under Plan 202 mod.
Right.
So if it is indeed a community of interest that would be better represented in by being concentrated,
right,
then 202 mod would do a slightly better job of that. But
okay,
it's pretty marginal. If you would oblige me, I did notice a somewhat distinction between some of the plans, especially the 202 mod and the 903 mod have very, very high statistics when it comes to single family residents, 95% and 93%, both of them. And that leaves the other three two districts to be in the low 70s. With the 902 mod and 902, the original, that's not quite the case because of that District 1 crossing the freeway. It has an effect where District 1 is in the mid 80s. Mm-hmm. And so that I noticed that as a pretty noticeable difference between the what you might call the 902s and the other ones.
Okay, thank you for that, Daniel. Okay, so then one more question of the same line of questioning, if you will. So in the income category, if we look at the 202 mod and the 903 mod, if you look at, for instance, we'll take the $25,000 to $50,000 income. So in both of those maps, they're actually, the District 3 is 22% and the District 4 is 15%. The same. Is that correct in both of those, Daniel? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. But then if you jump up to the 50 to 75,000, District 3 is 18%, District 4 is 19% in the 903 mod, so very similar. Yet in the 202 mod, it's 16% in District 3, and then in District 4, it's 21%. So not a huge difference, but definitely more different than the 903. So what I'm trying to do is go through that for the maps that we've kind of honed in on. And if you talk about we want to group people that are in the socioeconomic status or the same group, they would have the same interests, likes, dislikes, that's what we're trying to do. That's kind of where I go. Am I looking at the right, am I sort of honing in on the right thing to look at is what I'm asking you?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if it's more helpful to you to think of it more visually than looking at a bunch of numbers on a table, you can go to the interactive review map and scroll down. You have to go through all the plans, but eventually when you get to toward the bottom, you'll see there's a layer about income. And if you click on that, it will show you the percent with income $75,000 or higher. And you can see in general where the lower income is concentrated, which seems to be a little bit more north of Grand Avenue, roughly. And so you can contrast that with the focus plans, which are at the top of the layers. So, for example, you were talking about 202 mod, mm-hmm. and you can see that District 3 is very much concentrated in that vicinity.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Daniel. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
May I just offer a little bit, if it helps at all? Because mm-hmm. I think maybe part of the consideration is really what do we mean by community of interest? Mm-hmm. And that might be sort of what you're also getting at. Does it mean household type or housing type? Mm-hmm. Does it mean income, amount of income, or does it mean something else or a combination? And that's really ultimately up to the council and the feedback that we're receiving from the community. There are different schools of thought, I think, on whether, housing type is better off concentrated in one district versus kind of spread mm-hmm. in different districts. I think it's different from considering race or ethnicity, whereas mm-hmm. there we definitely have rules around not being able to either, crack and pack. Is that the right term? Yeah, so we can't not consider it, but we can't make it the only consideration.
Okay.
But housing type and income levels are of a different nature, and so it's up to the council to decide, does that make up a community of interest? If, like you're saying, we're trying to help folks kind of have the same interests and be able to vote as a group. Then
right. Well, just the same wants and desires. Or I'm just trying to, when you look at a community of interest, what does that mean exactly? So that's why I'm trying to dig through some of that data and say, would these people have things in common that they were adamant against or very passionate about? So that's what I'm trying to kind of weed through, right, what a community of interest is or isn't. So because there are in some of those maps, it's not perfect, and so that's why I'm trying to kind of find some common ground. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Daniel, for being here again. I have no questions, just looking forward to discussion.
And same for me, I only have comments. So let's go ahead and open up public comment at this time. Would anyone like to come forward on item 9C?
Good evening. My name is Glenn Martin. Most of you know me since I do sit on a planning commission and sit up there from time to time. I live on Olive Street here in Aurora Grande and have been a resident of Aurora Grande for many, many years. My interest tonight really is in the borders of the four districts. I did not submit a plan earlier knowing that that might be lost, and was hoping that we get down to a finite number might be a little more interesting and easier to really look at. And my hope here is to have these alternatives to be simple, understandable, and workable for the candidates running for local office. I like Highway 101 serving as a border. I like that the California rules and goals talked about being compact, easily identifiable, and dealing with communities of interest. The other comment I would make is that I would caution the council about micro interpretations of percentages. When we start talking about 17 and 18% as a variance between people of or multifamily zoning and incomes, we are a small community of 18,000 people. We have about 7,000 households. And no matter what we do, if we're going to try to keep things contiguous in communities of interest and things being easily identifiable, we're going to end up with variances of some kind, and hopefully you don't get lost in the minutia between 17 and 16% in some of these borders. Personally, I like Plan 202, the 202 modified. I live on Olive Street. It's down. We can get picked up. There it is up there. I live down almost where the number four is, actually, on that little list. I do believe our neighborhood fits into the neighborhood west of Halcyon fairly well. I recognize a little triangular zone that the consultant, I apologize, I don't remember your name, chatted about. And this plan is included in Area 2. I would call that Cornwall neighborhood, because Cornwall is one of the primary streets that's inside that. Between that and 902, it's really the biggest difference is putting our neighborhood east of Halcyon into number 2, and that area, I think, into number 3. But as a neighborhood of interest, and just geographically, I think as people come and go within the community, I like the Cornwall being included in Neighbor 2. Us being on the east side of Halcyon, all of our neighborhood certainly goes to Harlow Elementary and feeds into that. Certainly there's parts of Neighborhood 2 that are north of Fair Oaks and east of Halcyon that also attend Harlow, but the line's got to get drawn somewhere. So for me, I like 202 mod. Hopefully you give that your consideration as we pursue the final decisions. That's all I've got to say. Thank you very much.
Like a professional. Anyone else live want to come up? All right, at this time I'll turn it over to AGP.
We have one speaker on Zoom so far, Jim Guthrie. If anyone else on Zoom would like to speak, please raise your hand.
Hi, this is Jim Guthrie, 514 Starlight Lane. I guess I'll start off by saying actually 903 the best, partly because of the keeping the 101 as a really solid delineation between districts. Also, I know the discussion was about having to split up some of the census districts. As I remember from the last meeting, the splits were all between districts 1 and 2. So I'm not sure that would affect, since the biggest differences are between 3 and 4 as far as the biggest differences of population. I'm kind of mixed about sequencing. I feel pretty strongly that when I watched the last one, no one even mentioned the fact that if you did 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 or whatever the sequencing were, that you were going to leave one of the districts that could be enfranchised, that could have a representative, that one of them would be left out. I understand there's a lot of other considerations, certainly incumbency, but it does seem to me that enfranchising as many people as possible, as soon as possible in a district process would be the best route. But I can hear and see that there are a lot of other considerations. So anyway, that's my input. I would be in favor of seeing 3 and 4 go forward in 2022, and the two districts that have representatives who are staying over or who are in midterm, that those districts would go in 24, recognizing that that from my experience with elections, that probably the presidential elections would really affect 3 and 4. So there are some pluses to that as well. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, there are no more speakers on Zoom.
Thank you. Let's check in with City Clerk Mattson and see if there's any written correspondence received after 4 o'clock.
There are none.
All right, so I'll close public comment at this time and bring it back around to the council. Councilmember Storton, do you want to lead us off again?
Thank you, Mayor. What a great process this has been. I mean, it's been extremely open and a lot of involvement. I really appreciate the public that had provided us with many maps. How many did we get? 136? 156? 156.
156.
That's a lot of maps, and we've able to narrow it down to four. We've had discussions at our last meeting about the maps and the preferences. As I look at the maps, I do see the 101 corridor is really a hard, linear dividing line that really helps define areas. Right now, all maps meet the legal requirements. They're before us. They vary in some way or another, and it's like Mr. Martin said, it's where do we draw the line? And I think the most important issue now is making it easy for our residents, one, to understand where they're going to be elected from, and those that are going to elect them, where are they living, and who are they going to be voting for? And so I really think that is the primary issue here. I originally was really comfortable with 903 mod, but when we started talking about the 9% difference there and we're uncomfortably close to maybe some concerns, I'm looking more at the 2202 mod, as I wrote down here as a second choice, but I'm really waffling between those two, and I'd like to hear comments from my peers. As to the other two, I don't really like the idea of splitting up 101 and having a little bit of zone 1, district 1 on the other side of the freeway. I think that just gets too confusing. And I think our goal should be trying to make this as easily as possible to understand. So I'd appreciate any other comments and discussion.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor. I would tend to agree with Councilmember Sorton's comments. In general, I've been really pleased to see how much outreach our city has done. The fact that we received 156 maps by the public shows that the community was engaged. I wish more folks were here, but it's nice to see all of you here. And I'm sure folks are attending via Zoom and on TV. But I would say that the village, one of the things that I observed in the public comments around communities of interest was keeping the village intact, and that was a primary consideration of mine as well, and each of these maps do a good job at that. And then the second key feature, like Councilmember Storton mentioned, was the 101 corridor. I think that serves as a really good delineator. It's easily identifiable. And the member of the public, Glenn Martin, mentioned, I think we need to be considering how easy it's going to be for folks to walk and knock doors and know exactly what the boundaries of their district is. I think that's a key consideration. I think that whereas I was more in favor of the 903 mod at the last hearing, I think the 9% population deviation does concern me as well. And I can certainly see the benefits of the 202 mod and agree with, again, the comment made by Mr. Martin about the, I think you were calling it the Cornwall area or the triangle. That kind of makes sense, keeping it intact. Other than that, I would also, in terms of sequencing, be interested to hear the council's thoughts on the comment made by Mr. Guthrie about trying to enfranchise as many possible people as we can. When we look at where current council members live, there could be more representation on the west side of town. And so I'd be open to talking about the pros and cons of sequencing 3 and 4 in the upcoming election, as opposed to the alternate approach that we had previously discussed, which was really talking about trying not to create a east side versus west side dynamic with districts 1 and 2 going at one time and then 3 and 4 at another time. I think there are pros and cons all over the place, but we should definitely consider the districts that have the highest Latino population and try to the extent possible, I think, enfranchise that population by putting them on the ballot as soon as possible. Those are my comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnage?
Thank you. I really like 202 mod the best, sort of settled on that one. I like the borders as far as the Ash Street, and trying to look at communities of interest, just looking at multifamily, looking at different types of housing. And what I talked about earlier, I'm trying not to go about this a haphazard way and trying to look at sort of who lives in those districts and sort of what their likes and dislikes are and if they're true communities of interest. Communities of interest? Okay. And definitely the 101 boundary to me was between 1 and 3 was important, so I appreciate that as well. So that's the one I'm settled on for now, unless someone can give me some reasons why some other ones would be much better. As far as the sequencing, I really go back and forth. My first choice would be to have 3 and 4 go be first in 2022, because as Councilmember Paulding mentioned, we don't have representatives that live in those districts that are on the city council. And although we all, and our argument has been with this whole redistricting process, that I feel like our council does a really good job of engaging the whole community. We're a small town. We don't leave anybody out. All the opinions are important. But we're doing this because we want to engage more people and get more people involved. And right now, those districts are not represented. They are, but they aren't. This is why we're doing this process. So, but then I go back to, I don't think it's a us versus them on one side of the freeway. I don't think that plays into it all. But what does play into it is I really want people to be engaged and involved. And if the Latino population is more likely to vote in the presidential election, and they're always going to vote when it's not a presidential election, because that's kind of in perpetuity, I think. So I worry about that. So I go back and forth. So I'll be anxious to hear what everyone thinks. I'm sort of on the fence. I think my first preference would be 3 and 4 in 2022. But if not, then maybe 1 and 4 in 2022 and 2 and 3 in 2024.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem George?
I guess like my colleagues, we're kind of all on the same like wavelength, because 202 Mon was also a top contender for me. I think when we talk about geographically contiguous and undivided neighborhoods, there's just a clear delineation there, and it's easy for us to see, it's easy for the public to see, it'll be easy for candidates to understand, it'll be easy for candidates to canvass, and I think those are all things that we need to take into consideration. The 101, Halcyon, Fair Oaks, those are very known names of streets and clear delineators. So I just find that this is a concise and clean and easy to understand plan, and this would be the one that I would support. With all of the maps, District 3 has the highest population of Latinx, and that's something that we really need to take into consideration when we're talking about sequencing. And my biggest concern with having 3 and 4 be part of the 2022 election is 2022 election is right around the corner. And I just want to make sure that if there are people who are considering it, that we give them enough time to process what that means. When we talk about communities where there may be a lower income or it's multifamily, then they're working it. The concept of spending their evenings here and away from their families, it's something that they really have to take time to think about. It may not be as easy for some as it is for others to make the time to serve on the city council. And I just want to make sure that when we think about sequencing, we really think about the individual and give them the opportunity to step up. And my fear with having 3 and 4, if we group them together, and I'm not saying we should, but if we group them together, having them go in 2022 might not give them enough time. And then they're going to have to wait another 4 years before they can step up. So my vote would be to offer some consideration of time. I think that the presidential election does bring out a higher turnout. It would give them a little bit more ability to just be in the political moment and hopefully get some experience and mentoring under their belts as well. So I would recommend especially three. I think my biggest focus is three would be in 2024. So whether that's one and three or three and four, I would be up for conversation on that. And I think those are my main points right now. Thank you.
Thank you. So for me, I sat with this and I really spent a lot of time since the last time we talked in this time to really consider all these issues, both which map and the sequencing. And I talked to members of the community and I got actually a different perspective that wasn't shared last time that has really affected which map I'm looking at. So narrowing down, for me, I can take away 902 and 902 mod because I really do think the 101 is the delineation that we need to go with. I don't like having District 1 straddle the 101. It makes it, it's just counterintuitive to me. So that leaves me with 903 and 202. Before I make any other comments, Daniel, I do have a follow-up question that came up during council comments. How much off in 903 would the map have to be to reach a threshold of being off 1%? In other words, we're at 9% deviation right now. How much off would it have to be to push it over 10? Because that's going to help me be more comfortable with the census district blocks that we split.
Yeah. One of the public commenters actually made a good point, and that's the total population deviation that you see there of 9% is actually taking the most underpopulated district and adding it to the most overpopulated district, and that those are 3 and 4 actually. So let me just confirm that really quick. So this is. This is going to be 903 mod, and you'll see at the very top the District 3 is minus 4.5, District 4 is plus 4.4. You add their absolute values together and you get just under 9. And so while the estimates that we made were in reference to Districts 1 and 2, so if our estimates were a little off, these numbers might get closer to 4%, but these would probably still be the greatest deviations. So the Plan 903 mod is the deviation is largely due to 3 and 4. And of course, our estimates could be off in the other direction with districts 1 and 2, so that they're actually closer together than you see here. So it's I stress that it's totally legal to adopt a map that has less than 10%. It's just maybe a little safer and maybe a little closer to the ideal principle of one person, one vote to have it be a lower total population deviation. But it's we would not have brought this forward at this stage if it weren't legal to adopt this map.
Thank you very much for that. So looking at 903 and 202, would you mind putting 903? Oh, there it is. So just, that's good. The thing that was brought to my attention by a member of the community, actually, could you put up 202? Thank you, is that if we, as you all know, the us versus them piece of this, the concern is a real concern of mine. It's what I've said from the very beginning. And on this map, District 4 has no commercial. And so I'm concerned that there's a lack of balance in terms of the desires of each district and what their foci might be. And so for me, looking at 202 mod and 903, which both have 101 as the delineating boundary between 1 and 3, it pushes me
squarely into 903, because that means all four districts will have a significant commercial component. And while that's not a community of interest, it is in terms of the what Councilmember Barnich said about our council and our council members thinking of the community at large, and not being too parochial. So 903, I can live with 202. I'm not sure, honestly. I feel really strongly about 903 for that reason. It makes more sense to me that way. In terms of housing type, and there was an exchange between Councilmember Barnich and City Manager McDonald that really kind of helped me gel what I feel there. I think housing type is less an indicator than housing density. And I think that that is achieved by both 903 and 202. That was my first comment. My second comment is the ease of understanding. I think 903 is the easiest one to understand of all, because our collector streets of Elm and Halcyon are just such easy visual barriers, not barriers, delineators, that it makes sense from a community perspective that Halcyon to Briscoe, Elm to Grand, and the 101 are the delineators. You can easily explain that to the rest of the community. In terms of the district numbering, I didn't hear anybody say anything to that. I think it's somewhat arbitrary. I don't think it matters which one's called 1, 2, 3, and 4, so I wouldn't want to change it just because we've had 6 months of public hearings that have used these delineators, so I think we just need to leave it like that. In terms of sequencing, going into tonight and after talking to members of the community, I kind of flopped around a little bit and landed on feeling, until Mayor Pro Tem spoke, that 3 and 4 should go first, because the bottom line is they're not represented, and we would be making the conscious decision to allow them to continue to not be represented. And I think that's less of a concern to me than continuity of office. However, Mayor Pro Tem, you brought up a really important point about giving people time. So your preference was possibly leaving 3 the longest, but I think I would prefer to leave 4 the longest, because I would want to have the most highly concentrated community of interest to have the first crack at coming in. So that's where I land on that. So I don't necessarily need to go with 3 and 4. I was kind of like with Councilmember Barnich and with one of the speakers of saying 3 and 4 first, but I think that Mayor Pro Tem may have swayed me. So if we were going to do 3 or 4 rather than 3 and 4, I think that 2 should not be up in 2022, because 2 is highly overrepresented. So I think that if we were going to have either 1 or 2 go in 2022, then it should be number 1, because of the two of them, it's the least represented. So that's my comments, and that's probably going to generate a fair amount because we've all heard each other now. So if you have things to question or discuss, please don't wait for me. Just go ahead and chime in.
I would agree with keeping the districts the way they are labeled now, 1, 2, 3, and 4. I said this at the last meeting. That's what people know. That's what people see, and changing it now would just be confusing. If you're looking at the 903 mod, I would agree that District 4 should go last. If you're looking at the 202 mod, I would say District 3. I guess there's room for discussion for both. I'm still in favor of 202 mod. I just like the way that they're grouped so nicely, but the commercial component is a very important one, and I don't want to overlook that. So it's just going to take a little time to process what the mayor just said. So those are my initial responses.
Can you please restate what you meant about the sequencing? I didn't quite understand what you said.
I had initially thought that District 3 should go in 2024 to give the representative in that area the most time to prepare for the election. But on your proposing 903 And in 903, you had said District 4. Wait, what am I saying? No, District 3. Excuse me, District 3 for both. So excuse that last comment.
So I understand about the commercial, but I don't really understand why that would make a difference. I see that there's not commercial, but why would that make a difference in a community of interest not having commercial in their district?
It doesn't for a community of interest, but let's take as a possible discussion sales tax. Then when we talk about those kinds of funding type things, can you please put up 202? That in terms of representatives having a community-wide interest rather than a district-based interest, I think that it balances out those interests. Is that what I'm saying? I'm not, I don't know.
Well, I guess I just mean that Arroyo Grande is so small, so everyone in the whole city is going to go shop everywhere in the city. And so the sales tax will be they'll still be shopping in the same areas.
But if we're talking about, from my point of view, if we're talking about what the representatives' constituents are going to ask of them, that is my concern.
Okay, thank you.
Just as a proposed recommended course of action, I think it would be easiest if we could all build consensus around either the 902 or the 903 and then talk about sequencing and whatnot.
Did you mean 202?
I mean 202, excuse me. Yeah. That would at least simplify the having to alternate back and forth.
I am very much in favor of 202. I don't think I could come off of that for the reasons that I've stated.
I'll just add as well, 202 would be my preferred choice. I think we could probably nitpick this in a number of different ways. And once again, I think it goes back to geographical boundaries. I think the two that we're talking about provide that. I like the distinction of the districts on this one. And I didn't talk about sequencing. And I do like the idea of sequencing one side of the freeway and the other at the same time. And then we're kind of splitting hairs on which one do we choose to go first or second, but at least one of those areas gets the opportunity of going first and the other one will wait another 2 years as far as 3 and 4. I don't really have a preference in that way, but I do like the idea of separating the election throughout the community so as people are driving around and involving and engaging, at least it's all throughout our community as opposed to just one corner of our community at the same time.
So, Councilmember Storton, are you saying like 1 and 4 and
yes.
2 and 3 in order to get the
whole? Yes, that would be 1 and 4, 2 and 3.
As strongly as Councilmember Barnich feels about 202, I think that's how I feel about 903. So I think we may be split on this, but that's okay. So whatever the will of the majority is, or maybe there's more discussion to be had, but I'm fine with sitting by myself if I need to. So however y'all want to proceed.
Well, you're not looking for a motion this evening, are you, or just sort of general direction or
I would always love a motion, but we can make some but direction is fine too as far as what we would bring back in an ordinance at the next meeting to motion.
I think we could drag this on and we don't need to. We have a meeting, but we don't need to spend more time on this issue. I think we've had the public talk, we've been involved, so I'll move that we accept Plan 202 modification with sequencing of 1 and 4 in 2022 and 2 and 3 in 2024.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Matson, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
No.
All right, we're going to take a, I know you're all waiting, and I'm sorry, but we're going to take a very quick 5-minute break, and then we'll come right back. AGP, are we ready?
Yes, we are recording and broadcasting.
All right. Thank you all for your cooperation. I need this gavel in my classroom. Clearly, I don't need it here. This takes us to item 9C this evening. This is consideration of a resolution approving Arroyo Grande Community Service Grant Program allocations for fiscal year 2021-2022. And it says Pedrotti, but I see somebody else over there.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. Members of Council, good to see you all. I am Andrew Perez, your Acting Planning Manager, and I'll be presenting the recommended funding allocations for this year's Community Service Grant Program. Just as a little bit of background for the Council and our audience here, the grant program was established in 2014 by City Council as an alternative funding source for our local nonprofit organizations. Previously, these types of organizations relied on the Federal Community Development Block Grant Program, but our City Council at the time recognized that the CDBG program is quite cumbersome, both in the application and in the reporting requirements. So they developed the grant program as a alternative, as a simpler, faster way to provide funding for these types of service organizations. To be eligible for grant funding, organizations must provide a social service, educational, cultural, beautification, and or recreational program that directly benefits residents of Arroyo Grande. A total of $82,065 was available for this year's program. $25,000 came from the budgeted item, and an additional $57,065 came from American Rescue Plan Act funding that Council allocated to the program for this year. To be eligible for ARPA funding, organizations had to prove their financial situation was negatively impacted by the pandemic. They did so by showing us this on their application itself. So the application period for the grant program opened November 17th of 2021 and was open for 1 month. On December 17th, when the application period closed, a total of 22 applications were received, requesting a grand total of $169,178. For comparison, last year's program saw 16 applications submitted, requesting a total of $127,435. And Table 1 in the City Council staff report provides a summary of all the applicants, the programs that are proposed for to be funded by the grant program, the amount requested, and the recommendation as proposed from the grant review panel. So when the program was established in 2014, City Council established this criteria for a grant review panel as an equitable and effective way to allocate grant funding. This year's review panel consisted of one member from each of the city's advisory boards, which are the Architectural Review Committee, the Planning Commission, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board, and the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board. And the final fifth member came from the South County Chamber, Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. So the review panel is tasked with reviewing each of the applications and making funding recommendations to City Council. The grant panel met last Wednesday, March 2nd, via Zoom video conference. This was a public meeting, and it was noticed in accordance with the Brown Act. The review panel reviewed each of the 22 applications individually. Applicants from each of the organizations had the opportunity to address the review panel on behalf of their organization when their application was being discussed. The meeting concluded with a roundtable discussion amongst the review panel, and that is where they produced the final recommendations for Council's consideration this evening. So during that roundtable discussion, the review panel really identified three areas that they wanted to see funded through the program. First being organizations that are local, already established, and were forced to close their doors during the pandemic. Examples of these types of organizations were the Clark Center and Camp Arroyo Grande. The grant panel also prioritized funding for programs that provide services for the homeless in our community or those at risk of homelessness. Examples included Shower the People, the Arroyo Grande Hospital Foundation, and People's Self-Help Housing. And finally, the review panel prioritized funding for programs that benefit our youth and seniors in our community, such as the Arroyo Grande Bulls Baseball Organization, Slo County YMCA, and Five Cities Meals on Wheels. So right now I'll quickly run through the funding recommendations made by the grant panel, starting with the Arroyo Grande Bulls Baseball Club. The grant panel recommended $5,000, which would be used to run the baseball development camps that the Bulls Baseball Club puts on for the youth. The Arroyo Grande Hospital Foundation was recommended to receive $5,500. They would use that to create sleeping packs for homeless patients upon discharge from the hospital. The sleeping packs would include sleeping bags, thermal clothing, hand warmers, items of that nature, to keep those patients as comfortable as possible given their situation. The review panel suggested $2,500 for Arroyo Grande and Bloom. That money would be used for equipment, used for maintenance of landscaping throughout the city. Moving to the Assistance League, $2,500 was recommended that they would use for Operation School Bell, which supplied school supplies and clothing to children in need in our community. $1,000 was recommended for Big Brothers and Big Sisters for their youth mentoring programs. $1,500 was recommended for the Boy Scouts for recruitment and scholarships in their organization. The review panel recommended $15,000 go to Camp Arroyo Grande for restoration of their historic tabernacle. $2,100 was recommended for Campfire Central Coast. That would go towards running their after-school and summer programs for students. The review panel recommended $3,500 for the court-appointed special advocates for children. This is an organization that trains volunteers to advocate for children under the jurisdiction of the juvenile dependency court system. $1,000 was recommended for the Central Coast Aquarium for them to run their marine science labs for students. $4,000 was recommended to the Central Coast Childbirth Network to put on a wellness fair that connects families with resources for child care, nutrition, areas of that nature. The review panel recommended $10,000 for the Clark Center to fund scholarships, grants, and student art shows at the facility. $5,000 was recommended for Five Cities Meals on Wheels, which delivers hot meals to homebound residents in our city. $5,000 was also recommended for Hospice of Slo County, so they can continue their program of providing grief counseling and in-home support for patients and their families. $4,000 was recommended for the Lumina Alliance, an organization that provides emergency services for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. People's Self-Help Housing was recommended to receive $2,000 for their supportive housing program. Shower the People was recommended to receive $7,500 to continue their programs that provide showers for homeless individuals in the community. Slo County YMCA was recommended to receive $2,500. That would go towards providing financial assistance for students and families in need to send their children to after-school programs. $965 was recommended for Slo Score, an organization that provides free counseling for small businesses. The review panel recommended $2,000 for the South County Family and Educational and Cultural Center That would go towards a new roof for their facility. And finally, $2,000 was recommended for the United Way of Slo County to provide financial assistance for their support line that provides information for those in need. So in conclusion, staff does recommend that the council approve the funding recommendations made by the grant panel. However, council does have the option to modify the funding recommendations as they see fit. So that concludes my presentation, but I'd be happy to answer any questions should the council have any.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Parlby, would you like to kick us off?
Sure, but I'll just say I appreciate the staff report and I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Storton?
I have no questions.
Councilmember Barnage?
No questions, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Thank you. Just point of clarification. Andrew, could we see what you put up there as allocation for CASA? Because I have $1,000 and I think you had put $3,500.
Yeah, that is correct. Thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you. I have no questions.
I have no questions as well, so let's go ahead and finally open up public comment. Thank you so much for your patience. Come on up.
I'll go first since I'm going to be real brief. Is that okay?
We have time for everyone. Don't worry.
Madam Mayor, council members, thank you so much for inviting me. My name is Horace Morana, and I'm the former chair of SCORE San Luis Obispo. Last year, the San Luis Obispo chapter SCORE mentored 683 clients. Additionally, 780 clients attended recorded webinars and 300 clients attended live webinars. In total, we provided services to 1,743 clients. Your past financial support allowed our chapter to help small businesses owners achieve their dreams. For that, we are very grateful. For the coming year, we have aggressive goals to mentor even more clients and run additional free workshops. Our hope is to foster small businesses right here in the local community. We want to add jobs and strengthen the San Luis Obispo economy. We hope that the city of Arroyo Grande will continue to support our free mentoring and our free workshops. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to come up?
Hi, my name is Sarah DeYoung, and I'm from CASA. I am taking over as the development director as of this week, so I wasn't unaware of the meeting last week, but I'll make sure that we have that on our calendar for next year. I have been a CASA volunteer for 15 years, and I have been on staff for 3 years. The last 3 years I've been supervising, coaching, mentoring other CASA volunteers, which has been really a joyful experience, but I am segueing into the development director position. Last year, we served about 225 children across the county, and about 36 of those were placed in Arroyo Grande, either with foster homes or with their in family maintenance with their parents. And we generally have about 20 or so volunteers who live in Arroyo Grande. That's the case when I pulled the data today. And then, of course, we have other kids and other volunteers in across South County. So I came here tonight to express my gratitude for the support that we've gotten from the city of Arroyo Grande in the past years. I was a little hopeful when I saw that slide that I had read the resolution incorrectly, but I hadn't. But we are hopeful for continued support to support our mission with the foster kids in the county. And I look forward to working with the council in future years. Thank you.
So nervous. I've never done this before. Good evening. I sent you all a letter that hopefully you received yesterday and had a chance to read about Big Brothers Big Sisters. And I don't know about you. I suspect you probably get a little bit frustrated with this process too, because it seems like we're made to deal with finite numbers and things that we have to meet these goals. And some
sometimes there's so much more information involved. And that's what I tried to share with you in my letter, is that when we talk about the fact that we have 80 children in the program, specifically in Aurora Grande and in Lucia Mar District and such, and to report that 80 and perhaps have that looked at as a low number. When I look at it and I say, my goodness, I know these kids. I'm on the board. I've been doing this for over 20 years. And I have so many stories and success stories and such. But so, it's not just the child. It's the fact that the child learns these things. They go home. They modify their siblings. They modify their parents. They go to school and they act differently and they have better successes. And they go on to college. So the amount of people impacted to me is just great. And I hang on to that. So as I explained in the letter, it is hard to verify these things. Another thing is that it is often also multi-generational. These children, they go home, they teach the family, they have pride, they go on and have successful businesses and great lives. So it's just, and I gave you a little poem in my letter, I know, but it's like the ripples in the pond. You put a drop of pebble in the pond and it ripples and ripples and ripples and has not consequences, but it involves change much wider than that one child. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. And we also, I talked about that already. Okay. I'm here tonight. Oh gosh, I'm running out of time. We had a young lady who was going to come tonight and talk to you as well. She's 15 years old. She's one of our newest board members. She had to have an emergency root canal today. So have a thought for her. And I'm going to read her letter real quickly if you don't mind. My name is Jackie Diaz. I'm a 15-year-old and a sophomore at Aurora Grande High School. I'm a little sister, a big sister, and I am now the first youth member of the Big Brothers Big Sisters Board of Directors. She came to us. She decided this was something she wanted to do and applied for the job, and we gave it to her. As a little sister, I've learned various skills and gained experiences I wouldn't have otherwise. I've learned how to deal with people that aren't always the nicest. I've encountered a lot of difficult people, and learning how to deal with them is important throughout life. I've learned that I shouldn't stop myself from doing things because I'm afraid. The things that you're afraid of could be good things. If you don't try to overcome your fears, you won't progress. I've also learned how to do other fun things like bake and cook. And she says here, I'll make a mean cake pop. Am I done?
If you could, we'll go ahead and let you finish her letter as the end of your public comment.
Good, yeah. Where to go? I'm learning how to swim and embrace and branching out and trying new things. I'm also a big sister at the Judkins Middle School Mentoring Program. As a big sister, I've learned that it's hard to get your mentor to be comfortable with you, something I experienced firsthand. Once you do create that open relationship, you learn a lot about that person and the challenges they face on a daily basis, especially in middle school. I'm sure that most people would agree that middle school is tough. The transitions in middle school are tough enough without dealing with the bullying and the peer pressures. The middle school mentoring program also helps kids deal with these pressures in a positive way. I became a big sister, and now I am the first youth mentor on the board of directors. It has given me more confidence. The experiences have opened my mind and made me think that more things were possible. My big perspective has helped me to try new things. I probably wouldn't be doing this speech. Well, she was supposed to be here right now without having the attention and support of my mentor. Your support to increase funding the Big Brothers Big Sisters mentoring program will benefit all the at-risk children in the Paulding Middle School program. We hope you'll consider reevaluating the grant amount that you've given it to us. And I have to tell you, on a personal note, I don't understand how this works, and I will learn about it. But I was a little disappointed to see that the two programs of your applicants who were programs geared towards children in critical situations, one being CASA, where the children are already in the judicial system.
You might remember if we were going to have you stop at the comment because your time was up. So we did receive your letter.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate the
thank you. Call. Forgive me for stopping.
I'm sorry.
Some...
Council, I'm Greg Steinberger, Executive Director of Camp Aurora Grande. I want to say thank you to the city and to the council for the grant. And I want to invite the entire community We're restoring our tabernacle. It's going to turn 125 this year. And the restoration is going to be celebrated with a community-wide event on Saturday, June 4th. And we're going to have reenactments for historical purposes. We're going to have children's activities and an outdoor concert. So I look forward to spreading the word about that. And thank you. This is going to help immensely with that.
Anyone else?
Hello. My name is Ashley Boyer. I'm president of the Clark Center, and I'm here with many of our board members, Nan Fowler, J.B. Maravilla, Danny Kemble, and then our executive director, Connie Henley. We are very appreciative of the consideration of the council and the staff for this opportunity to apply for the grant and maybe receive those funds after your decision this evening. We are looking forward to a full program of arts and entertainment, arts and education, for our students. If you've never been privy, Karen might even enjoy this, to, given your background in teaching, to come watch our students see a show in the theater, maybe for the first time ever in that format. It's an amazing experience, and we provide those at no cost to those students and to those schools, so we're seriously looking forward to that back in the theater, and just getting back to normal after 2 years of having the theater dark. It's such an amazing facility, and we hope to get back to all of those services. Scholarships continue, and scholarships will continue, but really having those students experience that professional theater in person is what we're most proud of. So thank you.
Good evening. I'm Connie Henley, the executive director at the Clark Center. I want to thank Andrew very much for helping me through this process. It's not a grant that was really set up for our circumstances in this climate right now, because when I wrote it in November, we had no idea what we were going to be able to do in December, in January, in February. Since we're starting to get back on even keel, so I really appreciate your support. And the committee's thoughtfulness. I had my whole talk all ready to go on why it made sense, and I was so humbled and honored to hear the committee talk about how they felt about the theater, the ownership that they had in it being a community piece, and how important we were to the community, and how passionate they were about making sure that we got some of the support that we needed moving forward. So I want a big thank you to them, and thank you guys for including us in the process, and hoping to fund some more of the COVID relief stuff as well as the community. So thank you, and thanks for a nice evening.
Anyone else? All right, let's check in with AGP and go to Zoom.
Any member of the public on Zoom would like to comment on this item, please raise your hand. We have one speaker so far, Douglas Trowick.
Hello, good morning. Good evening, City Council members. My name is Douglas Trowick. I'm from the SLO County YMCA, and we'd like to thank the City of Arroyo Grande and the council members for the consideration of funding for our community organizations. We are especially grateful for your support of our local YMCA. The Y has been a leader in providing quality and safe childcare programs for over 65 years, and we've maintained safe facilities during the COVID-19 pandemic, following strict safety protocols while still offering enrichment programs. Everyone has the opportunity to participate in our programs regardless of their financial situation. The Y's financial assistance program, which this grant would help support, grants out assistance on a sliding scale. Families who apply on average receive a 45% scholarship on their program fees, which results in more than $400 of scholarships per child. The need has increased in the past 2 years, and the average scholarship amount has increased. Whether in after-school programs, our summer camps, youth sports, children at the Y are not just supervised, they are educated, supported, and encouraged to be the best person they can be. Thank you again for your consideration of this grant funding so the SLO County Y can continue to offer these meaningful programs to our community. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, that was the only speaker on Zoom.
Thank you. And City Clerk Mattson, any correspondence received since 4 p.m.?
There are none.
All right. Let's close public comment then and bring it back around to the council. Councilmember Barnage, would you like to leave us off?
Sure, thank you. So we've never had, even if you followed along, we used to have $20,000 for these grants. Then we had $25,000 because there were so many people applying and so many worthy groups that we felt we had to increase that. And then now we have almost over three times that. So it's really exciting. And because of that, perhaps, or because of the need, we got a lot of applications. So I certainly respect the committee's recommendations and their hard work in the in making these recommendations. And some years, if you watch the council meetings, the grant committee recommendations have remained unchanged after coming to council, but they do come to council for a public hearing so that we can deliberate and talk about it. There are changes sometimes made by council, and so I look forward to any discussion this evening. After receiving public comment, letters of public comment regarding an allocation, I proceeded to take a closer look at the allocations. I also talked with Planning Commissioner Guthrie this afternoon about who sat on the Grant Review Committee, had some questions. And so in the past practice, Council has indicated the priority to fund the needs of the most vulnerable in our community. And as we all know, the pandemic has really made those vulnerable even more vulnerable. And so with that in mind, I'm looking to tweak some of the allocations, especially since we've never had quite this much money and we might never have this much money again. So I look forward to council's comments, and I'd like to talk about that if there's anyone else who's interested in looking at the allocations.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton?
Thank you very much. Can you imagine we're in a position where we get to give away $82,000? We're pretty lucky and should be very thankful. I really appreciate the work that the committee has done putting together the recommendations. I really value the input that we ask of others, and they've spent a lot of time going through this. I'm not interested in manipulating any of the funds. I do feel like if you're an entity that didn't get exactly what you wanted, you still are walking away with something more than you had. And I also feel that even if your entity didn't get as much as you wanted, you probably know many people associated with these other entities who are going to benefit. And so there's a real value. I think this has touched a lot of different groups. As Councilmember Barnett said, we only had 25,000 at one time. Last year, we were able to up it to 50,000 because we were able to add some more funds. And this year, because of our additional COVID relief funds, we're able to add it a little more money. And, you know, it's for another discussion, but, you know, budget time is coming up and we'll have to see what that looks like and see what we can do for next year. But I am going to stick with the recommendations made by our committee, and those are my comments.
Councilmember Paulding?
Thank you, Mayor. This is an exciting opportunity, and thank you all for being here in attendance. And when I go through this list of allocations and recommendations by the committee, I think, you know, what would our community be like if we didn't have all of you, all of these wonderful nonprofits? You do so much great work. I am more in line with Councilmember Storton's thinking in terms of honoring the recommendations made by the committee. We have the committee for a reason, and so I'll approach this with strong deference to their recommendations, but I also have an open mind. So I'm interested to hear some of the proposed modifications tonight. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem George.
Thank you. This is a really a unique opportunity. The 20,000 in the past was in some ways a lot easier because we could just check off basic needs, and that pretty much would eat up the entire budget. We're in a unique situation now where we have ARPA funding, and we're looking at the ways that COVID has really affected, the pandemic has really affected our community and our service organizations and our ability to fundraise and to do business. Two of the businesses here were shuttered completely, and that's something to take very seriously. Having served as a panelist for a few years, I have an intimate relationship with this grant fund, and it's a very important fund for me. We would start with, I wasn't at the meetings, I don't know how that one was handled, but we would start with basic needs first: food, shelter, safety. Then we would look at those that are the most vulnerable and at risk in our community. And lastly, we would look at community service. And I think that we're in a unique situation right now where the community service actually gets some of the funds, because in the past, by the time we were done with food, shelter, safety, we were pretty much done with our budget. That being said, I have the greatest respect for our panel and the greatest respect for Andrew, because I know that managing that panel isn't always the easiest thing either. And it takes a lot of conversation to really whittle down the numbers to get to something that is consistent, that suits everyone's needs. That being said, understanding what our council priorities have been all along, having been with this council through this pandemic and all the conversations that we've had with the public and with each other and with staff, and understanding where the ARPA funds were intended to be used, I have, unfortunately, I do have some changes that I would like to see, mainly in the area of safety and needs for the vulnerable. So I would be open to hopefully have a discussion with council, but there are some changes that I would like to see made.
Thank you to Andrew. Thank you to our community members that sat on the panel. Thank you to all of you who do the hard work. It's easy for us once a year to give out some money, even though it's hard to decide where it's going to go, but you do the hard work 365 days a year. So thank you for what you do. I am in strong deference to the work that was done by the panel. We asked them to do a really, really hard job, and we asked staff to manage that. So I'm not really inclined to question that. For me, it's not a question of where I want to put more money. The question becomes, where do I want to give less? And that's a really difficult thing for me to get to here on the fly. So that being said, I'm certainly willing to listen. That's going to be hard for me to decide to reduce someone's allocation. So, and to, I don't want to say not honor, but I think I'd need a really strong reason to override what the committee proposed. So with that, we certainly said we'd like to hear it. So if y'all, Councilmember Barnich, if you wanted to make some proposals, or maybe you and Councilmember George would like to discuss what you would like to propose to the council as a whole.
Andrew, can you just put up, do you have a slide? I know you have the slide of what we allocated, but do you have the request at all in slides? I can get through them in the staff report. It's just, there's so much. It's really hard to get to each one.
Yeah, I could pull it up. Just okay. Give me 1 second. Okay, we have it now.
Okay, so the reason I had called former council member Guthrie, who's now on the Planning Commission, was because we received the public comment on the Big Brothers Big Sister. I used to actually be a Big Sister. My husband was a Big Brother years ago. And so I know the good work they do. And then we received the letter from Claire and the young board member that she read. And so we had allocated, they had asked for, I'm trying to find it, they had asked for $10,000, and we had given them $1,000, which I'm still not exactly clear why, but I definitely felt like that needed to, I mean, that organization has helped. Last year alone was 80 members in the Roy Brandy city. And again, very vulnerable population. Kids that need mentoring, definitely during the pandemic, I can't even imagine what some of these kids are probably going through. So this is just my preference. I go back to the basic needs, like Councilmember George. I go back to the community, to our goals as far as affordable housing, which we're not able to provide, but people's self-help housing does. So that's where mine naturally goes. I think, as I've talked about this before, there's wants and then there's needs. And so I understand not picking apart the grant, the committee recommendations, but at the same time, I just feel like there's some changes that could be made where everyone's getting a little bit of piece of the pie, but I feel like the most vulnerable, especially coming out of a pandemic, should be given more. And so I'm not saying we're going to take, personally, I wouldn't take away from everyone. I'm just saying that some of them need to, in my mind, need to go up because the percentage of what they've gotten and what they do for the community, to me, for our underserved population, is just not quite there.
And I will piggyback off of Councilmember Barnidge's comments and be a little bit more specific. I think that Big Brothers Big Sisters should be increased to 5,000. And I don't know how we want to go about making notes so that the rest of the council can have a visual. Or maybe just put it right next to it. I believe that CASA should get their full allotment. And I believe that Lumina Alliance should get a little bit more. I would, if we had to compromise, I would be okay with 4,000, but I think they should get a little bit more. Those are the three main ones that I would like to address. And I want to address those specifically because when we talk about the pandemic and when we talk about the damage that it's done a lot of damage to families with children and in unstable homes. And Lumina directly helps women in those situations, and CASA directly helps children in those situations. And Big Brothers and Big Sisters, we're talking about District 3 and looking for leaders to step up. And here we have a young 15-year-old on a board who will become a future leader if we're able to support this organization and organizations like this. So I have a lot of changes, but I would, just hearing the majority of the council, those are the ones that are the most important to me, if we could have a discussion on those. I think those are the main ones. Kristen, do you see any?
The Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, that was for the homeless packages that the patients that are discharged that don't have anywhere to go, no homes. So that was something that I wish we had given them the whole amount. So
sorry, I thought I was going to sneeze. Okay, so that's not quite $10,000. So my question remains. It's not hard to decide where we want more money to go. The hard part is deciding where less, which is why I wanted to stick with the others. I'm certainly willing to hear it, but where would you want to pull from?
I think that we could pull a little bit from some of our large donations. Campo Rio Grande at $15,000. I feel like we could shave a little off of there. It's just kind of everyone sharing the pool. Clark Center, as much as I hate to take a penny away from the Clark Center, I would say we could take a little bit from there. Where was it up there? Let me look online. It's easier for me to see. The Central Coast Childbirth Network, I think that we could take some from there, and those would be the three that I would initially take away from if I had to. United Way would be another one that I would consider taking away from just because it is a national organization, and I know that it gets a lot of funding from a lot of different sources. When my mom was working, a percentage of her paycheck every single month was taken out and given directly to United Way. So I feel like United Way could stand to lose that $2,000 from us and still be a well-funded organization. So that would be where I would start.
I really appreciate the passion. I really do. And it's a situation where I look at all of these and realize through COVID, everybody has suffered to some extent. A lot of times we do focus on the basic needs, and that's what we focused on the past. It's a lot of focus, even at the state level. There's a lot of focus in a number of different areas, but I think we're missing some pieces of our community where all of us, to some extent, had suffered at some point. And I'm certainly not going to compare it to being homeless or something like that. I don't mean to sound insensitive, but I just feel like the allocations that we have with the committee looking at it, we touch a variety of different people. I think only three of the entities received their full amounts. Everybody else was kind of, money was flowed differently. Not everybody got all their allocation, but everybody got a little bit of something. And I think in a lot of ways, this touches so many different members of our community, particularly Arroyo Grande. And I hate to kind of go through the fine details and figure out who's going to get what and who's not going to get what. And I, again, appreciate the committee's work and really having the discussion of what they felt. And it was a very diverse group that touched different areas of our community as well. So as much as I appreciate the comments and what you want to do, I'm just going to have to stay with the committee's recommendations.
Mayor, you want to go first? Just kidding.
I'm just listening.
Yeah, me too. Difficult decision. In some ways, I think there's a compelling argument to maybe add a little bit more to Big Brothers Big Sisters, given the disparity in allocation, the 1,000 to 10,000. I could see upping that by like 1,000. And I think there is a nexus to be made with United Way's fundraising potential as opposed to, you know, the local operation of the Big Brothers Big Sisters. I could support taking 1,000 away from United Way and putting it toward Big Brothers Big Sisters. And then I think the same goes with CASA. I know the benefit of that program. I have a close friend who's also, one of the mentors there. And I know the impact. Again, the impact of each organization on the list is tremendous, and this is a very difficult decision. But the question then would be where to reallocate funds. But I would say just a minor adjustment, like 500 or 1,000, and I could support that. In terms of the... I'm fine with the Central Coast Childbirth Network where they are, given the fact that they're at $4,000 out of the $6,000 request. And those are my initial comments.
I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, because I don't. For me, the difficulty isn't where to put more money, it's where to put less, and I still don't know where you're proposing to put less. And so without that, I don't...
Well, I think Councilmember George mentioned where she would take away.
But it's not up there, so I guess I'm asking...
They're highlighted right there.
No, I know, but we're still at the bottom amount. With the $91,000. We're $9,000 off right now, so we have to put a number to who's going to lose money and how much. And... I because my inclination is to stick with the community with the committee's recommendation, I'm not inclined to fiddle with the numbers. So I guess I'm saying I'm open to hearing where you want to do that, but it's kind of for you guys to do. That's what I'm trying to say in a nice way.
What is the difference? Is it 9,000? I'm sorry, I asked that poorly.
$9,700.
$9,700. I would take $5,000 from a Campo Rio Grande. I would take $2,000 from the Childbirth Network. I would take $2,000 from the Clark Center, and I would take away the United Way. I think I may be off by a few dollars.
I think she was taking $2,000 off the Clark Center.
So we're off by $700. But that would be roughly... I mean, I can
put 2,000 back in, or 50
back in. Yeah, we can put 50. Thank you. I would put it back into the Clark Center.
the 1,500 back into the clerk's center.
Andrew, I think it would be 1,300.
Thank you. Whoever can do the math.
No, no.
Like 93 or something like that.
We're 1,300 off right now. There we go.
There. That would be my proposal. And I know that hurts, and I don't take this lightly, and I appreciate the council's consideration, however the end vote is. Thank you.
And we've been in a situation before where there was another nonprofit who stepped up and said, I understand these other worthy organizations are doing great work, and I'm okay with lowering my amount. I think it was Jana from Five Cities Homeless Coalition, because we all know you know each other. It's a small community. But if you're having to give up a little bit of money, know that it's, if this goes the way it's going to go, it's going to incredible, incredible work that these people are doing for vulnerable people in the community. And you guys are all doing amazing things, and it's all different. But I think we're just sharing it a little bit more, and we're spreading the wealth. So I hope it's not so too negative is what I'm saying.
If I'm the swing vote here, I'm supportive of the proposed modification.
Thank you for your expedience.
I'll make a motion that the City of Aurora Grande approve the resolution approving the Aurora Grande Community Service Grant Program allocations for fiscal year 2021-2022 with the proposed modifications in column D.
Second.
Any discussion? Councilmember Storton, and
you know, not really discussion. I mean, how sad can I mean? Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Palmer.
There we go. I mean, we have a chance to give money to a variety of people in a positive way, and by voting no, it sounds so terrible. You know.
Well, you can vote yes then, Keith.
I know. Thank you for that. I know I have that choice. I just really appreciate the committee's work, and I do give a lot of deference to that. We ask a lot of people to take the time and energy. I see the allocations, and a lot of people are going to do well with the money that they have. I just go back to trying to appreciate the process that we have and the people that we've tasked to make the decision. We've probably evaluated it much more than us, and sometimes we can pick and choose based upon our experiences with some of these different entities, and so we have our own biases built in with things that we see up there that we might think would be good or bad. And so I like to remove myself from that and rely on the others that had made the choices, so I'm not using my own biases.
You're killing me, Keith.
that's how I feel too, but I feel that if I vote no, then I'm Scrooge. And that's a really tough position to be in. So I'm really having some heartburn over this. Well, we have a motion and a floor on the floor and a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
I'll make it unanimous.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for that, everyone. That is so hard. We appreciate your kind clap at the end, and thank you for all that you do. This does take us to item 10, old business. We have none. Items 11, we have none. So we are at council communications right now. Does anyone have anything to share? Councilor Paulding's moving.
Oh, I just wanted to say, because it's in honor of Women's Month or Women's History Month, that it is a pleasure serving with the majority women council, and I also wanted to give a shout out to our city manager for doing such a good job and leading our community in that way. So
and our city clerk,
Miranda too.
Today's also International Women's Day as well.
Is it really?
Is it today?
Yeah. I would like to see if there is interest. I've complained or bugged about this for the last 2 years, maybe three. I would love to have on the grant committee two members at large from the community, because I feel like there are people represented that are really in the know, and I would love to get two other people to serve and maybe encourage them to do something besides serve on that committee. But I just feel like we need some other insight to our community and what the grant money should go towards. So if I could get someone else, if not, then that's that.
I would really have a hard time with that, because who would choose them? And typically when we have, and I don't want to get too far down the hole, the Brown Act hole, but how would those be chosen, under what criteria and all that? Because typically when we have committees, if the council's choosing, there's five and each of us choose one.
The committee as it stands now is very business-centered. Three of the members are on a business-type committee. And so I just feel like there's a segment of someone that we're missing to provide input into these grants. And I would like more, I would like a different perspective. I would like it to be more varied. So I'm not sure staff would have to come up with that.
Happy Women's Day.
Yay.
I would support a discussion. I don't know if I would support necessarily at large, but definitely something for staff to bring forward to us. I would support a discussion for sure. We had initially talked at large, but.
Can I ask a question? Would that mean that we'd have to bring a whole separate item back for staff? I would just remind council of our top 10 priorities, which may be more than 10. And if it's going to require staff workload, I would say defer that discussion at this point in time.
8 months from now? I mean, that it doesn't. It's a year from now.
Could it be brought back with the item? The staff have an opinion or a path forward that would minimize impacting other priorities of our council with this item?
I think so. It would need to be brought back before we convene the panel, and so and I think. Ideally, it would be brought back before we usually open the application periods in November. And so we'd want to probably let everyone know what to expect. I honestly don't know how we would go about doing the community at large appointment process. We are similarly not sure how that would go.
Okay,
so we would need to have a discussion, do some research. It would take some work on our part to provide the options to council. I mean, it's hard because right now 8 months away sounds like ages, but then in terms of the goals and priorities, you know, it isn't on there, but then there are lots of things that aren't either, and we just end up needing to work through them. So
I don't know if it has to be at large. I wanted a more diverse group to review the grants. I don't know how to say it nicer than that, but I just want different walks of life to review the grants, and I've complained about it for the last couple of years. So,
well, our council handbook says that we have a motion, not a motion, but a suggestion, and we do have a second here. So, that's what our council handbook says. So, it shall be done.
Any others?
On a side note, did you know that we have a slow beaver brigade?
Excuse me?
Thank you. We have a slow beaver brigade, and they shared a lot of great statistics about beavers, including the fact that our Rio Grande Creek here has them. So they will be doing a survey in the spring to bring back to us an exact number of beavers so that we can share the knowledge with the public. So that was just something that I just had to share.
Maybe we'll have two honorary
The rooster
animals.
And the beaver.
Right.
And a funny note, way back when in the 1800s, there were 60 to 400 million beavers. But through... Yes.
In Oregon?
No, in the U.S. Sorry. Yeah, in Oregon, no. But through the beaver trade and fur trade, they got decimated down to 100,000. And so I think it was in the 50s. They imagine this visual for you. They would airdrop and parachute beavers down into different areas. So our beavers may not be from our area. They may not be locals, but their ancestors were airdropped
from the sky
and parachuted down from the sky. So
now I've heard everything.
That's my council communication that I wanted to share with you tonight that I got at the RAC meeting.
And I would like to remind everyone that we do have the volunteer opportunity at Strother Park this weekend for the Aurora County Public Art and specifically for Project Blackboard. And if you can't make it, we will certainly accept your donation. So if you could consider that, that would be great. If there is no more, then that takes us to closed session. We have none. So item 14 is adjournment. We'll see you in 2 weeks, everyone. Thank you.